far are you going?
About 30 years.
In this week's episode, journey into the Conocalypse Now of Anime Blues Con.
I wanted a mission. And for my sins, they gave me one. It was a real choice mission. And when it was over, I'd never want another. I was going to the worst place in the world, and I didn't even know it yet. Weeks away and hundreds of miles up a river that snaked through the war like a main circuit cable, plugged straight into Kurtz. It was no accident that I got to be the caretaker of Colonel Walter E. Kurtz's memory, any more than being back in Saigon was an accident. There is no way to tell his story without telling my own.
I don't know.
You know, honestly, like, the message I put months ago, like, you guys didn't respond. And so then I just assumed that, like, I guess the podcast is dead and over with. Because we only recorded this is our second recording of 2023.
I think it was probably 6 months since we recorded anything.
Yes, because we recorded, like, right after the new year, and we're like, oh, you know, 10 years, blah, blah, blah. And then that took, like, 3 months to edit because I just had way too much going on, and yeah.
So yeah, I just saw that you had all these weird pictures from Metalocalypse and stuff on the Discord server recently, and no. I was curious, like, what was going on at this con?
Oh, shoot. No, yeah, that's a cosplayer that he's a Dr. Roxo cosplayer for Anime Blues Con, and that's what he does every year is cosplay Dr. Roxo. So.
Oh, so you've seen this guy before?
I've never seen him at any other convention except this one.
Oh, okay.
I'm kind of I'm curious, like, where did he get the freaking, like, One Piece, like, thing like that? Like, I guess it's got to be custom made or something.
Yeah.
And he's got, like,
maybe
the nose.
Maybe it was just an athletics store.
Probably, yeah. But the fact that he's got the color, like, down pat and, like, the boots and everything, like, that, I would imagine if he dumped that much money into it, heck yeah, you can rock that every year.
Yeah, this guy needs to, like, contact Adult Swim about being in a live-action Metalocalypse.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I hope so. He's actually, like, thin enough to be, like, because, like, Dr. Roxo in the show was an aging rock star. And this guy is, like, thin, so, like, they could do, like, a live-action, like, backstory of Dr. Roxo.
The origin.
The origin of Roxo. Something like that. Yeah, that would be a good idea.
Well, they are making some new Metalocalypse movie, I think, but it's animated.
Uh-huh.
Although I believe they do, like, live-action stage shows and stuff, or, you know, music shows, so I don't know if they have the secondary characters in any of those, or if it's just the main musicians in it, but
yeah,
I assume they try to make the guys look like the actual Death Clock members for the performances. I don't know.
I've never seen the show. I just know, like, Brandon Small and them did it. But I don't know if they actually dressed up. I think they just played the music or whatever, but I could be wrong.
Maybe so. I've never seen videos.
I've never seen videos.
I just imagine it looking like Spinal Tap, you know?
Well, that would be interesting. so our Anime of Yesteryear is not dead if we're recording another episode. Now, granted, I can't guarantee when this is going to come out. We're recording July 11th of 2023. So maybe this will be out around Thanksgiving.
It'll come out July 2024.
Maybe. I don't know. I think I've got time to actually, like, kind of, like, edit and work on it some more. I don't know. I had a lot going on, like, the beginning of this year. And, like, A and B projects took up most of my time. But I'm at a point where, like, I'm done making all the stuff I want to make for Anime Week in Atlanta. I made another trailer where I combined Berserk and Conan the Barbarian for Otakon, and sadly it did not make finals, but I think I had some questionably gory parts in my AMV because I wasn't holding back, and that's probably why it was disqualified as a finalist. They didn't disqualify the video. They just weren't going to make it as a... I don't know. That's my guess. So that's just an assumption.
The Conan movie from the 80s is pretty gory. Yeah. Is that the one you used?
Yes. Can you see that matching with... Yes, the Arnold one. Can you see that matching with Berserk one-to-one?
Oh, yeah.
Otacon doesn't have the guts.
The 90s Berserk music.
I didn't add any of the 90s Berserk music. Anyways, but like... Okay. No, but like... Otacon doesn't have the guts to add in Guts of Barbaria and as a finalist for trailer. So, screw you guys. That's my sore spot. Anyways, I've submitted to other cons, so I'm hoping it does well. It's playing at some, like, international con, I think in the Middle East or something. But I submitted to it. Yeah.
They like Conan in the Middle East, I guess.
I submitted it. I don't know if I'm a finalist, but I'm pretty sure it'll get played there. I mean, I don't know. I mean...
Yeah.
They're pretty barbaric over there.
That kind of barbarian lifestyle, they love that. They'll play it at ISIS Con or something.
I don't know. I think the con's called Abunai or whatever. I believe it's in the Middle East. Or maybe in Europe or something, I don't know. But shoot, as long as people like it, I don't care.
How did it get over there? Did you just like look up like World of Cons?
There's people that promote their cons on animemusicvideos.org and the forums, and that's how I know about these people that have like AMV contests, and I'll submit them that way usually, or I'll find some cons here and there.
So, yeah. Interesting.
Well, my video was an NSFW. There was an NSFW contest for BlurredCon out in DC, and it was a finalist for action, but it did not win. This is more of a trailer than an action AMV, but at least it was a finalist there. So people got to see it. I can't complain. Oh my gosh, I have to regale you. Everything that happened to me in the past 5 days or 6 days, like I'm starting out this episode with a disclaimer. Hold on, I gotta shut the door.
You're gonna issue a trigger warning for the people.
Trigger warning. This is an anti-Memphis rant episode.
Oh, Memphis, okay, right.
The city of Memphis and the people therein of. That we may be using some terminology
like ghetto
or hood rat. Hood rat's a good term.
Okay.
And also the homeless. So there's your trigger warning words. You have been warned, and this is at honest. If you don't believe me and you think I'm making it up, go down there. Go down to where I was at the Regent or whatever the heck, convention center, which is across the other side of the interstate where the freaking Bass Pro Shop Pyramid's at. Go into that area. After hearing this, if you think I'm a liar, and see for yourself, and see if I'm right, because I am. I'm saving you the trouble, but, you know, no one's going to go there, but I hope they don't.
Wander around there unarmed at midnight and see how safe you are.
There you go. I mean, there's a lot of cops in that area, but, like, it still doesn't mean anything. But, anyways, I've come to two sayings. This is one I made up, which is, if you're going through Memphis, keep driving.
Right.
And also, if you're not from Memphis, you don't belong there, which is what somebody else said that was at the convention. He's like, we have sort of a saying where, like, if you're not from Memphis, then don't come here. Or you don't belong here or whatever. And he's like, this is why I live 30 minutes away. And I'm just here to do this convention and help run a game room or whatever. So, oh, man. So I feel like I have to tell my con story and the narration of Martin Sheen from Apocalypse Now, where it starts out with, they gave me a con for my sins and I took it or whatever because I needed the money. I was going to the worst place on the planet and I didn't even know it. Through a couple hundred miles of Interstate 40 lied the worst con experience I ever had. I cannot tell the con story without telling my own in the process. Something along those lines. And I say, I figured I just have like the Doors playing in the background as I say all this stuff. Like, this is the end. Do, do, do. My friend, the end.
You're really building this up as an ominous experience.
I absolutely am. I've never, I know I have con stories, dude. And I've told every con story I have, but this is more about the city of Memphis. The con actually itself, when, like, what my part in the con of being in the game room and help running that, and the staff at the con was actually all right. It's everything outside of that freaking convention center that I'm about to tell you of the 3 days of high adventure and fearing for my life at some points.
Yeah, this is kind of how I feel when I go to the ToyCon when it's in Glendale. It's like you've got these homeless people just like wandering around in the streets that you never know if they're gonna like try to like break into your car when the traffic is stopped at a red light.
I gotcha.
Or something, because they're just like, you know, it is like a zombie kind of situation. Mm-hmm. And
I imagine
Memphis is about 100 times worse, because it's got a reputation like halfway across the country. I know this place is a dump. You know, it's not well known for being a nice place.
Yeah, I mean, my brother was just like, well, what did you expect? And I was like, a little bit less worse, but it is what it is. So, anyway, I can talk about the positive. Let me talk about the positive stuff about the con, Anime Blues Con. So, I went with a group, and they sell games at cons called Gamers for Gamers, and I've known these guys, it's a couple that runs it. I've known them for years. And, anyways, so they live like 3 hours from me, up in the, western North Carolina in the mountain area. And, so like in terms of them running the game room, we helped set it up. We did all this stuff and busted our butts. We were like one of the first people there and like one of the last people, actually the last people to leave. One of the last people. That's a whole other thing too. That's a story in itself. So anyways, so like we had to set up a gaming, like half the gaming room, and it's in a big ballroom, and I'd say we did a pretty good job of that. And the other part of it was there's an arcade group called Snow Phoenix where you can rent them out and they'll provide arcades for conventions. So like they had brought like Initial D version 8. Zero is what they brought. So I got to play Initial D. As long as I get Initial D, I'm happy. That was the only arcade game I had time to play, really. And they had like Dance Dance Revolution. Yeah, I'm always seeking Initial D out. I mean, that's what I did at MomoCon. And still, anybody I raced, I beat them, because it's what I do. Anyways, so So once I got made up with them, we drove from one end of Tennessee basically to the other, and that's about a 7-8 hour drive. Tennessee is like the state that wants to try to be like Texas in terms of length, but they suck at doing it. So there's nothing that special about Tennessee other than the two Buc-ee's that are about 50 miles apart. There's one outside of Knoxville, and then there's another one they just built, which is apparently the largest in the nation as of now, until Texas says, hold my Lone Star beer. And I imagine they're going to eventually turn a county in Texas into a Buc-ee's, because why the heck not? It's Texas.
Isn't Tennessee kind of long and flat, like the Oklahoma Panhandle or something?
Yes. Yeah. That's a good way to describe it. It only gets mountainous when you get to like the Gatlinburg area, and that's on the east side of Tennessee. So, we stayed at
Kentucky or something.
Something like that. I don't know much about that.
Or West Virginia. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, flat is West Virginia has a lot of mountains, because that's all in the Appalachian area.
Well, yeah, because you were mentioning the mountain area, and I wasn't sure like what exactly does Tennessee border. It must be states, right?
Well,
like,
I mean, Tennessee borders Kentucky,
North Carolina,
Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas, Missouri, and Mississippi, maybe Louisiana.
Damn, that's a lot of states.
Yeah, but then Texas is bordered to another country, so it has that going for it.
Yeah, Texas is bordered like New Mexico, Arkansas, Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Louisiana.
Yeah.
Mexico, yeah. Old Mexico as well as New Mexico.
Yeah. It's got both Mexican.
Yeah.
Old and new. Anyway, so we stayed at a hotel, like a DoubleTree, before we got to go stay at the Sheraton, which was across the street from the convention center, which was convenient for us, which I'm glad. And so anyway, so we're heading towards Memphis, we're past Nashville, you know, whatever. And there was a point where the guy driving, that I've known for years. So he is, you know, him and his wife are in the front, and I was in the back with one of his like helpers at his company, or is it one of his employees? And they converted, they put it in like a 3-seat like seating thing. They had it custom built to put it back in there in the back of this Mercedes-Benz Sprinter, or Sprinter, which is like the big like vans that like Amazon deliveries people do to like have all the packages and stuff. It's that type of van. Oh, hold on. I've got my whiskey prepared, so I'm good. Anyway, so we're coming, we're, you know, we passed over like an exit or whatever. We're on the interstate and there's someone that's pulling off. The person that's pulling off has a Dodge Challenger that's got part of his car missing and no plate. Literally,
well,
there's
always promising.
Exactly. There's no back bumper on it. And there's like the driver's side, like wheel area. There's nothing there. And it doesn't have a tag. And he's trying to get on. At the same time, we're driving in their state. So, you know, my buddy hits the brakes. But then they also hit the brakes. So then my buddy was like, well, screw you. You didn't get in front of me in time. You're in a freaking muscle car. And he just goes on. So I didn't see this happen. But he said something about it was the fact that apparently the driver was going to pass us. And as they were passing us, he flipped us off. But not only did he flip us off, he decided to point a gun at him and his wife in the driver's side because he cut him off. He held his arm out of the window and pointed a gun at them and then sped on. And my friend was like,
You were in the car with them and you didn't see the gun?
No, I'm in the back. I'm in the back seat, man. They got like this metal barrier doorway, everything. It's weird. Yeah, they had it custom built, so I couldn't only see so much. His wife didn't see it because she was looking at her phone, and he saw it, and he's like, oh, you know, hell effing no. We're going to – and so we're on the phone with the state police for like 15 minutes, naming mile markers, getting in touch with somebody. We're describing the car. It doesn't have a plate. It's missing pieces. It's a Dodge Challenger. It's dark. You can't miss it. And eventually a trooper came up and pulled him over, and then we stopped about a mile ahead of that. Or half a mile or whatever, and waited, and then another trooper came over to us so he can give his testimony. I don't think the trooper saw me or the other guy with me. His name was Kyle. So the trooper probably didn't know that we had two more people in the back of the van because I just stayed quiet the whole time. We both did. We didn't say anything. Because after he left and got the statement, and my friend was just like, I'm going to press charges against him and let me know when the court date is. I will fly out and make sure I'm there to press charges, you know, whatever. And, yeah, that's just, anyways, but then after he walked away, and he's just like, I don't think the trooper knows you were back there. And I'm like, I'm not saying anything. I'm not involved in any of this. I'm driving along with you. So.
Yeah, it's best for you not to get involved. If you didn't see anything, you can't really be a witness.
Yeah, anyway. I can't witness anything. I can't describe. I can tell you what the car looks like because we saw it, you know, on the interstate. Right. But, like, yeah. And.
That's, you know, crazy, though. Yeah, they didn't fire it, though. They just.
No.
It.
It was just as a threat, but when you pull out your pistol like that, in terms of like concealed carry stuff, yes, it is a crime, but like if you're going to pull it out, you're intending to use it for self-defense. And otherwise you're a threat. And, you know, to use it to scare people and act like a, you know, badass or whatever is just stupid. So, and I don't know, the thing is, I haven't heard anything about like what happened with that, as far as I know. But it's just like, all they need is to know is that the gun was in the car when they pulled him over, and then they got your testimony, and they can probably nail him on something. And he's also got a dash cam, so I'm not sure if they pulled it up on the dash cam or not, so, or they were able to find the file.
They probably just stole that car and had half stripped it for parts or something.
That's true, yes, because again, there's no tag on it, yeah.
Oh. Yeah. It would be hard to get because there's no plate, and they've probably sold the rest of it for parts. You know.
Yeah. Anyways, so.
But maybe if they describe the driver, did he get a good look at the driver?
I mean, he was a hood rat.
Right.
Yep.
And there's a million of those there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Anyways, so.
Yeah.
All right. So, anyways, that happened. That happened. And then we finally got to the hotel we're staying at. But the story is always. It's kind of like the theme with Mother Russia, where it's always, and then it got worse. So, it got worse and then interesting. So, so anyways, for Thursday, we get to the convention center and we're loading up stuff and, you know, we're busting tail about it. And so by the time they kick us out about maybe 10 o'clock or so, you know, we got most of our stuff done and we just kind of finished it up in the morning. So we had like 3 hours to finish everything up like Friday morning before the con opened. And, I can't really think of anything on Thursday that happened other than we found there was a bar that's, underneath on the other side of the interstate from the hotel called Wesley's. And it's a bar. I mean, like they had, and it was probably the most decent place where we got decent food there, surprisingly for a bar food. And, so we were there like four nights we were there like three times at night. About every single night. And, so one story with Wesley's was the fact that, Thursday night we were there and then, we got snacks and I got a drink or whatever. And, so Friday we went back there after the first day of the show. And we weren't in there 5 minutes. And there was this big black dude that was starting an altercation in the bar with the owner. I don't know the whole specifics, but this was happening the same time they had a guy playing music. So you hear this guy never stopped playing music. He just kept going, even though this big burly black dude in the back was like getting in the owner's face and pointing his finger at him and touching his forehead at how pissed off he was. I don't know what happened, but like the guy was like, I'm gonna sue the shit out of this place. Y'all racist fuck, blah, blah, blah. Running his mouth. and then they take him out. And then 5 minutes later, he comes back in and starts yelling, or like maybe 2 minutes later. And then the police show up. So maybe they threw him in an actual cooler to cool him off. I don't know. I don't know what happened. I don't know what happened to him. We never saw him, but I'm just kind of like, well, this is an entertaining night. We've got, we got the UFC fight happening and a music show, 10 feet from us. All right. This is how they do it in Memphis. So I was just like, oh, all right, no gun is being pulled out. At least there's that. And, we're the page. Yeah. It was just like, oh boy, this is a bar. In Memphis, what did you expect?
Can you tell why he was so angry?
I think it was something like regarding one of the somebody called him, said he beat his wife or something. I have no idea. Okay. I don't know. He just started yelling about some stuff. He was slamming his fist on the bar, just pissed off, and I couldn't understand half of what he said other than, y'all racist and I'm gonna sue y'all and whatever, and it's like, no, you're not. Anyways, yeah. The owner,
You should have recorded it and put it on World Star.
Oh my gosh. No, I was just like, please don't bring a gun and shoot up the place, sir. Don't take your anger on the rest of us. We're here to buy drinks and make it till tomorrow. All right, so anyway, so that was Friday, I think, in terms of highlights. So Saturday, I got to experience the local Wendy's next to the convention center. So the thing here, so let me explain the convention center itself at night. It was next to, there's a trolleyway that goes past it, and that was actually really cool. And people rode on it. And there was also people that had these carriages with horses. And it was funny because the people that were running the horses, it looks like a carriage out of a Disney movie, but imagine having that and a bunch of big speakers on top blaring rap music. Yes. So it's like ghetto Disney princess the ride in Memphis.
The Memphis version of Disneyland.
I shit you not. but anyways, I had to make the brave trek. I do want to say that I was well protected. I had stuff on me to protect me from people if somebody tried to start something with me, and I'll leave it at that. I had to walk 3 blocks. To go get food for the staff Friday, Saturday and Sunday. And, So I went to the Wendy's there. So like the, I basically try to avoid as much homeless, you know, people as possible. I'm basically walking past the police station and a judicial building, which is the county jail, obviously. And the county jail was trashy. There was a pair of used pink panties in the road, and who knows how long it's been there. And I'm just like, I don't want to know. I'm just going to keep walking. And there was like,
some girl took those off while they were doing the horse-drawn carriage or something after a guy proposed to her.
Who, dude, I don't know. I don't want to know, and I don't know, and I don't want to know. Anyways, but it was, yeah, so I'm walking there. It's also, let me tell you how, it was ungodly hot and humid, and so you're dealing with mosquitoes, and the city of Memphis has a terrible drainage issue. Because there's all these water puddles, giant puddles of water everywhere, and they don't drain. And then you wonder why there's like a billion mosquitoes everywhere. Like, I haven't had to deal with any mosquitoes this summer until I went to Memphis. Oh. Anyways, And there's a bunch of cops in front of the judicial building, which is the safest I felt in the entire walk. So I get to the Wendy's there. And this is, as I can best describe it, Wendy's in the hood. So Wendy's in the ghetto was, I went in there because I had three separate orders. Because this is how I do it. You know, one dude handed me cash. So that's an order right there. The husband and wife handed me their business card to get them food. So there's another order there, and then I ordered for myself. So, and that seemed to kind of sort of confuse them in a way, because I put in three orders, and they wanted to make an order one at a time. So there was four people working that whole entire restaurant, that Saturday that I was there. And I'm being patient with them, I'm being friendly, because that's the best you can do. And I felt really bad because there was a family behind me, and they eventually left. So, because it took them so long to make the food, and that day on Saturday they had two cooks making the food, and the reason why I had to go out and get food, and I had to bring a backpack with me, is I had to smuggle food into the convention center, because if the convention center says they don't allow it outside food. Which is bull crap, because first of all, we broke that rule. Second of all, I saw people eating Zaxby's in the main commerce area on a table. And I'm like, I don't really care about your stupid rules or whatever signs you have on your doors at this point. And this was like Saturday.
Right.
I saw this and it's, I'm like, either it's movie theater. Maybe it's like the staff or something was eating, and they're like, you know, because like I've come to the conclusion the people that break the rules are the ones that make them. Anyways, whatever. But so like I have to put all this food in my bag, and you know, so I'm paying for the food, so it was a process, and so then I'm walking back through the humidity and I'm trying to avoid like homeless people or whatever. So that was Saturday. It was, you know, like I was, you know, they were slow, whatever. I was like, you know, as long as I get my food and you guys don't do anything to it, that's fine. So Sunday was a different story. Sunday I had to go get three separate orders again, you know, so I trekked over there, and this time the cook had an attitude with me. The cook was pissed off because he didn't know why I wanted to have three separate orders for food. I ordered, like, one of them was like a Baconator with no ketchup or no mayonnaise or something, and then I just ordered another Baconator with everything on it, and I didn't want to get the Baconator because I wanted a salad. Well, they were out of salad. Go figure. So the cook started bitching and was like, man, I don't get this, you know, like, I don't get this shit, you know, like, well, why the fuck are you gonna make all this, you know, complicated, blah, blah, blah. And then his manager started chewing him out for complaining and how, like, you don't want to get, if you keep complaining, I'm gonna fire you, and you don't, we don't want no bad review, blah, blah, blah. And this is all in front of me and, like, another homeless dude that walked in there eventually. We were the only two people inside there. And then it dawned on me that was like, there's a reason why this Wendy's, when I've come to it two tight days in a row, and why there's nobody here during like regular, like people are, like it's lunchtime and nobody's lining up to come to this Wendy's. And now I understand.
This is the Wendy's.
Yeah. So, no, the cook was pissed off that I had these three separate orders, because he was mad because he's the only one back there making the food. No one's helping him. And the manager's like, it's not your job. You have no say in this. You're the cook. Just make what's there. And then eventually he left to come to the counter to ask me, why did I have to order three separate orders? He wanted, like, it just pissed him off so much. And I'm just laughing.
The cook came to the counter?
He came to the counter to confront me. To why, like, I don't understand why you got, like, a baconator and one order, and you want to make another order of baconator, and then the manager's like, hey, back then, we'll get your back, you know, black ass back in the kitchen and make that food. You don't get, the guy don't say on this. I kid you not, dude. It was about, the manager did not cuss. I bet you she chewed his butt out the minute I walked out that door. Which is how a man, she was trying to be as professional as possible, but she was also fussing at him hard while he was back there cussing up a storm, cooking food. I can't.
About making a baconator for him.
I will never come back to your place. I should give him a negative review, but I just like, okay. If I get this guy fired, what is it? What am I really like? I'm making what's already a shitty restaurant even worse. They need someone to cook food. I'm just going to let them deal with that. Deal with him.
And what's he going to do if you get him fired? He's going to like join a gang or something instead.
And hunt me down two states over. I love to see him try. You're welcome to attempt this, sir. Like, come at me, bro.
The Wendy's revenge story.
Oh my gosh. Oh. So here's what happened. So like as I'm walking back from the Wendy's at the convention center, and one of the homeless guys was asking for money, and he was just like, "Hey man, you got like 75 cents?" And I'm just like, "I don't have any spare change for you, sir." And he's like, "I didn't ask for your spare change," and I'm like, "What does that mean?" That wasn't my response, I swear. This is one of the little bus stops, and he was waiting for his bus or something. Would he need money for the bus? I didn't want to help him. He's not my problem. And if I had change, I wouldn't give it to him. Just leave me the heck alone, dude. I've never had that as a response from anybody begging for money. You're just like, I don't have any money to give you, sir, or spare money or whatever. And you know, I don't wish for spare money. I didn't ask for that. And I'm like, who are you? That the man, like, it made no sense.
I'm trying to argue with the homeless. Just ignore them.
No, I didn't respond back. I just kept walking. I didn't care. Also, within about a minute later, on the other side of the street, and the other side of the street is on the other side of where the judicial building is. There was a guy taking a piss on the side of the road with his backside facing the road. And I can assure you the guy was pissing. I did not want to see anything further past what I saw, which was just the back of him. He was leaned against a fence, and there was a fence that was protecting like one of those like power grid things or a power box or whatever, the outside ones. He had his arm up comfortably, and like his hand near his like pockets or whatever, and he wasn't moving, and he was in a stable position that would, you would instantly think that dude is taking a piss. And I'm like, I'm across the street in between a police station and the county jail, and nothing is happening to him. Where am I?
Yeah. I actually one time saw a homeless guy taking a piss when I was in Tokyo, and I was kind of surprised because I was like,
wow.
You know, you think this doesn't happen in like with the nicest city of the world, right?
Okay.
I guess there's homeless people everywhere, but you know, it's at least, well, he wasn't like trying to attack me or something.
Yeah, well, they're polite homeless people. I could take that, you know.
Yeah.
No, but like, I mean, what was it? There was an area like in Tokyo called, they nicknamed it Piss Alley because of all the bars. So then everyone who got done with the bars just went in this one alley and just pissed all over it. Pissed everywhere. So it smelled like piss. That's the story. Like, this should be... Hold up. Let's look that up on the internet. I swear. This is a real thing.
That's a thing in New York too. New York City, I've heard there's
piss alley. Parts where they just piss everywhere. Tokyo.
Yeah.
Okay, website culturaltip.com. A guide to Tokyo's piss alley. There's an actual article on this. First paragraph. Just by the west gate of Shinjuku Station in Tokyo lies Piss Alley, also known as Nanbei Yokocho, Drunkard's Alley, and Yomode Yokocho, Memory Lane. Was now a collection of small bars, yakitori grilled chicken restaurants, and street food stalls is what used to be a hangover from the heady post-World War II days.
They gentrified it.
Okay, next. Okay, I'm just going to read this other one. Starting as an illegal drinking quarter in the late 40s, this narrow-sided street quickly became the prime spot for cheap drinks, yakitori, and cabaret-style hostess bars. Due to the lack of restroom facilities, patrons would wander off and relieve themselves on the nearby train tracks, and it didn't take long for Piss Alley to earn its name. What a great website. All right. I think I'll just start calling that road Piss Road or whatever. That'd be my nickname for that side of Memphis. That's a good nickname.
I'm imagining this is like the area in Mason Okoku where Godai and Mitaka are like getting drunk and fighting right before his finals. Just like some sort of old school Japanese area with a hostess bar. Lots of people eating and drinking and beating the shit out of each other.
Like the olden days of Japanese anime lifestyles, exactly. Yes. That's how they did it back in the days, a.k.a. the 80s. I don't know, man. I'm good with that. As long as I'm not involved, I can be just a spectator.
A spectator.
Yeah, really.
Japanese bump fights.
So anyways, all right, so back to my Memphis story of just that Sunday. So I went back. And I gave everyone their food, and I was just like, you guys aren't gonna believe what I witnessed at Wendy's. And I told like the guy and his wife, and the guy who runs it, his name's Josh, and Josh was just like, if I was there, he was like, oh, what I would have done to piss him off was I would have went, I want everything on that order on a separate ticket. He's like, if I was there, I would have ordered every single thing on that order as a separate order. And watch your cook go into and lose his mind for my amusement. And I went, Josh, this is why I went, and you did not tell me to do that, and you didn't know about what was going to happen. I'm glad I went because I just wanted to get out of there, dude. Oh man. So I got to tell you. We checked out.
Gone to McDonald's and gotten the Grimace Shake instead. That's what everybody's doing.
There
now.
Wasn't. I wish there was a McDonald's close by. I don't know if that would have been. If there even was one close by, I don't know if that would have been any better. I don't know, man.
It wouldn't have been.
No.
Let's be real.
I know. McDonald's probably would have been worse. I don't know. There would have been bullet holes in the windows and blood from the bum fights in the middle of the dining hall. Who knows? I could absolutely be right. I could be absolutely right about the McDonald's in that area if it does exist. And someone is like, holy crap, I know you're making this up, but that actually just happened last night. Like, I would not be surprised by that.
Leave your McDonald's horror stories from Memphis in the comments below.
I honestly am at the point where, like, if this convention is held to that same area next year, I am not helping them out. I'm not going to do it. There's no way I'm going back to that area. There's no way. I can't do it.
You might risk your life going back
there. It's not worth it. I'm helping this group, these people out for like some extra cash or whatever. Like I took off a few days from work to help them. So, you know, anyways, and speaking of, I'm waiting to get paid for my job. I told his wife and I was like, let me know when Josh pays me. And I haven't, that was like earlier today and I haven't received anything yet. So I'm like, and I'm helping him this weekend at a con in Greenville. So we'll find out.
Well, they'll probably pay you this weekend then, huh?
They need to pay me eventually. So like, yeah. If I'm there this weekend, I'm like, all right, you owe me for last weekend and what? I just work for you this weekend. Who knows? But
tell them that you have like a special Memphis charge or something. Like the inconvenience of being in Memphis is like an extra $100.
I'm not. So anyways, John, I'm not even, I'm not done talking about Memphis. So let me continue. Cause wait, there's more. So we checked out what's called Beale Street. Beale Street, how they described it to me was like if Memphis wanted to knock off Las Vegas and make it as an entertaining district and make it colorful and crap. And it was colorful and also full of crap. So
the
we
colors like red from blood, green from vomit,
okay,
yellow
no.
from piss. Like all the colors of the rainbow. From
that that matter, yeah. Mm. Anyway, so so we decided to walk there, and that was about maybe 5-6 blocks away. Hold on. Let me clear my throat.
Every time you mention it being a certain number of blocks, I'm imagining like those videos of Detroit where you see somebody just drive a few blocks and there's like a fire on the side of the road.
Yeah.
You see a hit and run happen. You see like some people beating the shit out of each other just over a few blocks.
I'm grateful I did not see that. And I hope I never do, but anyway, yeah. Anyway, so we were walking parallel to like the side of the road or whatever. Well, it's interesting because like the convention center, like there's a road in front of it, like in the entrance, but you can't keep going parallel with it because it's like a park or whatever. And that's the area where the homeless people are at. And then if you keep walking that way, it's a brick area for just the trains and the horses to go through. And also the fact that people drive around in gaiters as a taxi service. So, which if you they offer you a ride, but they won't tell you that they're a taxi service, and then I guess you got to pay them when you get off because one guy like stopped us like, hey, you guys want a lift? And I immediately went like, heck yeah! But we didn't take it because I was just following along. And then after he drove around, Josh was like, yeah, they're a taxi service, and they would have charged us a bunch just to get us to Beale Street. We're not doing that. And I said, okay. So I'm glad
they're
I learned.
They're just
something.
Unmarked taxis, like freelance people.
They're these like gator vehicles that are four seaters, and they got like lights on them and stuff. But there's nothing to indicate that they're a taxi service. But that's what they are.
Okay.
So anyway, so we're just keep walking, and we did see like an actual beat cop, like a Memphis police officer walking a beat, like on the strip or whatever. So I'm like, okay, there's police presence out there of somewhat. But then there's also some like other homeless people. One of them was asking for money. And then we ran into the crazy homeless guy, the stereotypical crazy guy where he's just like out in the middle, like moving around erratically going, like pointing at stuff. And we ran into that kind of homeless guy. And we just kept on walking.
This reminds me, there was this homeless guy that I used to see at a thrift store in Texas, and he'd always be hanging sideways off of a pole. He would just like he would be there like all the time, and that was like his thing, was he was just hanging off the side of a pole, and we called him the pole hanger. He was apparently his former coach that he'd like become homeless and crazy or something, and so his new thing was just he hangs around outside the thrift store, literally hangs around on the side of a pole, and I guess they just let him.
Wow. No, but like one of the comments Josh made was just like, hey, he's just like, man, it must be great to be that oblivious and unaware and that much on drugs that you just don't care. That you're living your life and you're just so out there that you have no idea what's really going on. It must be wonderful. Anyway, so we kept walking. And we got to this, like, as I like to call it, a hood rat bar in the middle of just this random part on the walkway. And you hear all the music before you ever see it because they have, like, all the rap music blaring as loud as possible. And we just kept walking. I was like, I'm sure as hell not going in there. And, But it was just weird. It was just like, it reminded me of like, again, I'm taken back to Apocalypse Now where they're like on the river and they go to the Dolong Bridge and it's a bunch of lights and they're like in the middle of a firefight and, you know, they go off of it to find a commanding officer and, you know, they find nothing there and they just keep on going, you know, into the darkness, void of the river. This is what this like was like. That was like that bar was like the Dolong Bridge of Apocalypse Now for Memphis, for like our walk to get to Beale Street. And it was just like, it was just randomly out of nowhere, because everything else was like shut down. There was like nothing there. Of course the Starbucks was shut down. And this was late at night. And then it dawned on me, and the more I looked around, I was like, wait, I've seen this before. This is downtown Augusta, but just much larger. Cause like downtown Augusta was like, there's a section
in
of
Georgia.
Yes. Where there's a section where like it would completely had all this life and vibrant and all the restaurants and all the people were at. And then the other half was the hood with like a couple record stores and a strip club and probably bail bonding or whatever. So.
Yeah.
So then we took a corner and then we saw Beale Street in front of us. And so Beale Street, the way it works is that if you're going to go in there with any kind of weaponry, a knife, gun, ammunition, whatever, you cannot go in, because you have to be over 21 to get in there. So they check your IDs. You pay $5 to get in, just to get on the street. And then they wand you down to make sure you're not bringing anything in there. And then there's cops everywhere, of course. Now, after that, if you leave that area, you're on your own. So it doesn't help you any much, you know, for the cops. But anyways, it was a mixture of people that were just there to party or whatever. So there was like the blacks and the whites and the rednecks and stuff like that. Also, on top of that, we're trying to find a place to eat, like, you know, late at night, about 11 o'clock or so. And the restaurants or the bars wanted to also have you pay a cover charge to go in there. So not only did you pay $5 to get on the freaking street, you had to pay between $5 and $10 to get into their bars just to see if they would even serve you an actual meal. So there was that crap. And we went into like a barbecue place and there was like four people in there and it was empty. And I was like, nobody's here. There's a reason why. And so we left. So then we realized we're not getting far with this. This is too much work. So we just walked two blocks and went to a Hooters and had dinner that night. And this was Saturday night. And we actually had a meal at Hooters and had some drinks or whatever. So it was something. And we had a really nice hostess. Her name was Addison. She was like, I just turned 18 like two or three months ago. Yeah. Really cute, of course. Hot, yeah. You know, hot 18-year-old.
Well,
she belongs, she perfectly, you know, belong, or I don't say anyone belongs at Hooters, but like in terms of like the quality of hot, attractive women to work there, she made the grade. And she had a very, very nice personality, and her name was Addison. She had the same name as my freaking cat, my old cat. That's funny. She was sweet. I liked her. But anyways, yeah, she, at least with her, it was like, hey, you know, like, I'm trying to do a good job. I'm putting in the effort, and I'm just like, oh, you meet us halfway, we can work with you. So we're not trying to be difficult. I mean, at least for me, it wasn't, but
it was better than the Wendy's experience.
Oh my gosh, heck yeah. There was a guy, they had a bouncer at the door too. This guy had like a sidearm on him. I don't know if he was like security or like a, you know, an off-duty officer or something that was just, but they had security at that place, so that's good. I noticed that.
Well, yeah, because people in Memphis are going to get drunk and start groping the waitresses.
Yeah, so he's basically a glorified bouncer that just chills out, which is, I mean, smart. It's you know, for Memphis, yeah, you need to have that.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyways, so oh man, I'm just trying to think. Yeah, so we wind up taking an Uber to get back to our hotel Saturday night, because I'm not freaking walking four more blocks and we don't know what's out there. Like, we're taking a freaking Uber. And I'm like, absolutely. And then Sunday night we wind up like having us, like, we're done with the con. Oh, but speaking of, so we were the last ones out. I'll just say that the guy I was working with, his mother was there to sell stuff for him also in the vendor's room. And she had she had a very hard time wrapping everything up that she needed to, And so she was like we were helping, and we had to get to the point where we had to help her get everything taken down and out of there. And it came down to like one staff member. He was really cool. I liked him. The guy, the head of the con, his daughter, who was also working, heading up, as a main, con person also. The guy who runs it, his name is George, and his daughter is Ellie, and they're Korean or whatever. So they were really nice. She was really cool to talk to. And so they were like the last, like they were waiting on us to leave. And I felt so bad, but, but she's like, the mom has like hip issues, so she's supposed to go see like a doctor this week or something. So, but I saw her at MomoCon and she seemed fine. That was, over a month ago. So I don't know, but she seemed to really take to me, and she was cool to talk to and whatnot. I don't even remember what I was doing, but we went to Wesley's that night. Nothing happened there, thankfully. And, there was also one other girl that came with us too. So on the way out from Memphis, Sunday, Memphis roads are such crap. Or maybe it's just the people they allow on the roads, because you got these truck drivers that they'll dump something, and if they're carrying rocks, they stuff will fall out of the bed of the big dump trucks or whatever. So we're driving. And we're leaving Memphis, and we're giving all the middle fingers we got to that town, because I never want to go back there again and stay. And the windshield of the Sprinter, a rock hit it enough where it looks like there was a freak. They had a bullet hole hit it. Like it left like a huge shattered part of that windshield from a rock that came from the dumpster
in Memphis.
Yeah, do what?
Now it blends in Memphis. It's adopted the local character.
Yeah, really. I was just like, all right. And then a rock hits the windshield and it makes this giant bullet size whole crater and shatters the glass. So now the guy has to go get the glass repaired on the Sprinter. And it didn't happen there. It happened in another spot on the other side of the windshield above his head, on the driver's side. So then we're just taking bets of what else can happen to us on the drive back. And I'm just telling everyone to shut up. stop talking. Stop cursing us. It just became a joke. But we hit up a Whataburger on the way out. I needed a Whataburger. And we got there 3 minutes after breakfast closed, and I asked, and they were like, oh, we stopped serving. I'm like, look, I understand I'm 3 minutes late. Can I at least get the breakfast burger? At least give me that. And then she's like, okay, we got enough to make it. We got enough materials to make the breakfast burger. So I wound up getting my meal eventually, and I was happy with that, because I haven't had one of those in over 3.5 years. That was good. And then we stopped at a Buc-ee's. Outside of Knoxville, and I had a brisket sandwich from them. And I stayed the night at their place, and then I came back this morning and went straight to work. So, the con itself, in terms of con stories of people we had to work with. So, alright, so get this. So one dude, they sold these mystery boxes, which had a bunch of one of them was these mystery boxes where you get a console and a couple of games with it. And one guy bought a mystery box, but he didn't like what was in it. And he wanted to see if he can return it or exchange it for something. So inside the mystery box,
a day turner move.
So let me explain. So this kid returned a Super Famicom with three games, a Super Famicom Street Fighter 2, Japanese Street Fighter 2, Japanese Mario Kart, and Japanese Super Mario Brothers. And the value was about $125, which, if you buy their system separately in the games, you would spend more on that than buying the mystery box. But the mystery box is a mystery. You're not supposed to know what's in it. That's the joy of it. You don't know what you're going to get.
The cost of the mystery box was $125, or the value of the items in there?
The value of the items is what I meant.
So how much did he pay for the mystery box?
I think he paid $125, and that's with the Super Famicom controller, the power ports, and three or four games in there, which is actually
So it was a fair value for
that. He got a very good deal, I'd say. Depending on the people that sell in the booth or whatever.
Japanese games are cheaper than American ones, but I don't know about specifically Super Famicom.
I'll just say this about their business is like they sell things at their price. And, you know, like one guy came over and he was just like, okay, you guys are selling this GameCube controller for like, you know, $60 or whatever. And I can find the same thing on Amazon for $40. And it's just like, look, I don't make the prices or anything. And plus, you know, they're saying that they refurbish the controllers and they fix them up and clean them or whatever. So, like, the guy is
that Amazon stuff is not even the same. It's like,
it's not, yeah. This is authentic. This is authentic stuff. And this guy's trying to price match with them. And it's like, don't complain to me. Talk to her. You know, like, this is, I'm just helping.
Expect some degree of markup at a con. I mean,
yeah.
Realistically, because people are having to pay for people to work at their booth and they're having to pay to drive there.
Exactly.
To buy the items to begin with to resell them.
Yeah.
I mean, realistically, you're not going to price match at a con.
Yeah. Well, one kid bought like one of those like Xbox like mini fridges where you can put like energy drinks in it. And they had like one like that was still in a box brand new for like $80, which I think is a pretty fair price because you don't see those often. I don't know. I looked at it. I was like, I don't even know if I've ever seen this. But anyways, so the kid decided to trade in $125 value of what he got for a $60 PlayStation Vita game. So he lost money. Like, why don't you just keep the console you got? Because he's like, oh, that's not what I thought was in the box. I thought I'd get like a Vita or something. And I'm like, you don't know what you're going to get. It's a mystery box, dude. Too freaking bad.
I mean, really, if you don't, that's why I always wondered, why is JT doing this? Because Jay Turner would always buy these boxes and they'd come with like bags of air or something. And it's like, you don't know what you're getting. So why are you buying this? But I mean, like in this case, they actually got something that's like decent. So it's even more ridiculous.
Yeah.
They're upset.
Yeah. So we had that kid. Another guy was someone who had very, very bad English. He was like Latino or something, and we could hardly understand him. I mean, he had all these technical issues. He bought like a DS, and then he had a question like, "Oh, you put a parental lock on it or something?" And I'm like, "No, we didn't," because you know, like they get these systems in and they reset them and work on them or whatever. And it's just like it's probably something you did. We sure as heck didn't put this on there, you know, and then we're trying to help him troubleshoot it. So we try to help him troubleshoot it, and then he winds up walking away. So I was like, we can't help your problem if you just walk away, dude.
I didn't even know you could do that to a DS. I guess you can make it where it can't play M-rated games or whatever.
I guess. I don't know, dude. He just came over, and he's trying to explain it. I'm like, I have no idea what you're saying, but... I did help a girl, I think this girl was like in high school or something, but she bought a PSP and I talked her into like, she didn't know what game she wanted to get. So I was like, I was happy cause I was helping her buy stuff. So I was just like, she's like, okay, well, I kind of like RPGs. I'm like, okay, well, look, the Vita games here, we got some RPGs, we got Final Fantasy stuff. And then I was just like, hey, you know, there's a Gundam game here. She's like, oh, I like Gundam. I said, okay, well, here's Gundam Versus on the PSP. It's a fighting game. I think you really like it. So she wanted to go with the Gundam game. And then she came back the next day and got Dissidia for the PSP, the fighting Final Fantasy game. And I was, so like, I felt really good. I was just like, wow, you know, like I got to talk to someone and help make a sale. And, you know, like, I was like, wow, that was really cool.
Did you get her number?
Nah. I didn't. I think she was a high school student, so. Oh, no, 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 no. Oh my gosh. I'm glad you told me this. Oh my gosh. So Friday when we got done setting up and people were coming in and, you know, I'm going over and I think I would say like, hey, if you guys need any help, let me know. If you guys got any questions, let me know. I went up to one girl and I was just like, hey, you know, like if you got any questions, just let us know. And she looked at me. She goes, what's your number? And I was like, we're not there yet. That was my response. And she's like, you can't blame me for trying to get your number, you know?
Well, that's flattering.
She was definitely a person that I was like, I looked at her and I was like, no. And this ain't gonna happen. It ain't gonna fly.
At least she tried.
She did try. I came in and she's like, you can't blame me for trying. I'm like, no, I can't. there was a cosplay. So I tried in terms of trying to get numbers. I talked to, I helped a cosplay girl trying to figure out. she was apparently one of the guests there, one of the cosplayers. She had a booth in the vendor's room, but we were talking, and she seemed really nice, and she was, like, from Missouri or whatever.
What did she cosplay as?
I don't know, but her name was, like, Thai Cosplay or something, or Tay Cosplay, and, sorry. And so I was just like, hey, you know, like, do you have a card or something? And then she's like, well, I don't have one on me. And I was like, well, you know, I'm in the video game room tomorrow if you want to stop by. And she seemed really nice, and it seemed like, oh, well, maybe there's something there. So then I checked out the vendor room, like, Friday, and so I found her booth, and I was like, hey, you know, good to see you. And we were talking for a little bit, and she gave me her card. I said, well, you know, I got your email here. I'll shoot you an email if you want to, you know, do something for dinner one night or something. You know, I was asking her out. And so then eventually, after a couple hours, I sent her an email like, hey, you know, I was just sending an email. Here's my number if you want to text me. Let me know if you want to meet up. She never responded. So who knows if she even checked the email, but I haven't heard from her. I doubt I will, but at least I tried. And I don't know. I thought she was pretty cute. But anyway, so I that was my attempt at trying to get with someone at the con. But anywho.
You can't blame you for trying.
Yeah, really.
as your admirer would say.
Yeah. I will say it was pretty cool. Like, one of the dealers had, there was a guy just doing his own selling, and he had a bunch of Discotech stuff, but he also had Megazone 2-3 on Blu-ray from Anime Ego, which I worked on that project. And
You sent me a copy that has those little magnets and stuff.
I did?
Yeah.
I'm glad I did. I don't remember doing that, but I'm glad I sent you stuff for it. Did I send you a Blu-ray too, or was it just magnets or a patch or something?
No, I'm pretty sure it was the magnets and the Blu-ray, and there's like patches and like there's a little art book in there.
Yeah, because that sounds about right. Because whenever I get like, you know, I work on something for Robert, he sends me like a bunch of like, you know, like four collector's editions. So then like I keep, you know, I get the one that I have, but then I got all these bonuses. So I'm just like,
yeah,
I'm,
I think
you know,
sent me one for Otaku no Video.
I did do that. Yes, I do remember that.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, so but you know, I'm picking up the regular Blu-ray, and then like it's just really cool that I look on the back and there's my name on it, as like, you know, like extra, you know, the staff or whatever that worked on it. And then I'm telling the guy, I'm like, hey, you know, I worked on this. He's like, oh wow, that's really cool. And I'm like, yeah, my name's right here, you know. And told him what I did for Anime Ego, and Well, last year they said that they were announcing that they were working on Macross 2. I will say, I haven't signed anything, but we are starting to do stuff for Macross 2.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say that. That's where we're at. I've done some stuff for it. That's all I'm going to say. So
I have that anime on VHS.
I have never seen it. So,
oh, really?
This is a like, I'm going to be watching this and checking subtitles and crap on something that I've actually never seen, which I think is kind of interesting for me, because, like, if it's something that I really like, I haven't, like, the stuff that we've been putting out on Blu-ray, you know, the stuff I really wanted to work on, I wasn't able to work on. But then the stuff I don't really know too much about, or, like, you know, I'm not, like, that, you know, huge of a fan of it. I was the stuff I put a lot of work into it, like with Megazone 2-3 and Maddox. And I've seen Megazone 2-3, Maddox on 1, and I'm talking a video already, but like they're not like, you know, the thing I really, really like. I mean, I like Megazone and all that, but I'm not a huge fan of it. But there's people that are diehard fans of Megazone. And I guess for me, it's like maybe it's a good thing that I'm working on stuff that I'm not too passionate about. Because then I feel like if I am, then like, you know, like I might ruin it in some way. But maybe then also it's interesting because I'm working on something like, oh, this is something I've actually never seen before. So I don't have like a conception of like a standard that like I should have working on a lot, you know, like, oh, because I don't know too much about it. So, you know, with like Macross 2, like, you know, I've seen bits of it, but like I've never seen the whole thing. And so I don't know what to expect when I actually like have to sit down and actually work on subtitle checking or whatever. And I can probably just enjoy the whole thing. And, so that'd be pretty interesting, but I think that's a good way to work on stuff is working on things that maybe you're not like, you don't really like, but then like you'll still enjoy working on it. It's, and instead of like, cause everyone wants to work on their favorite thing. And maybe in a way you might be able to ruin it, but if you work on something you don't know too much about or don't care about, you probably do better at it. If that makes any sense. I don't know.
I guess it might. If you were like really into something and you have some misconception about the way it should be translated.
Yeah, or how it should look, or, you know, like it needs to be this way. This is my ideal because I love it so much. And
yeah.
So, but like with something else, it's just like, oh, you know, okay, we'll do it this way. That's no problem. Whatever. You know,
I think there is a dub of Macross 2 that was made years ago by
manga?
I don't recall who. It may have been Manga or Urban Vision or one of these.
Oh, really, what, are you talking about movies. US Renditions,
that's probably it, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds about right. They did put it out. Yeah. Yeah,
I think that's what I have. Okay. It's one of these VHS tapes that was a former rental at BCS Video that I bought from them. Mm-hmm. I bought a lot like that, like Orgaso 2 and, you know, some other stuff.
Yeah.
Lots of Gundam OVAs.
Yeah. But yeah, it's just really cool. Just, you know, just you're able to just go to a con and see something. Cause like, you know, like they don't, Anime Ego's not selling their stuff in retail stores unless you go to like a secondhand, like anime store and the owner there buys stuff and he's like, oh, it's a collector's edition. It's $400 or something stupid. But you know, the fact that you can pick up something and like, oh wow, you know, I worked on this and my name's right there. And that's just really, really cool. And, that's just a really, really cool experience to have. And, I understand like a lot of anime fans may or may not ever get that chance to like work. I've been very fortunate to keep doing stuff for Anime Ego when I can. And that's been every single release since I'm talking to a video.
But how does it compare to writing an essay about Okama characters in Lupin the Third, like CG got to do?
I guess it's the same thing. I mean, but like my thing was more on production, and his is like an opinion piece for Bluey. But it's still
counts. Yeah, it's totally different. But yeah,
yeah. You know, I'm actually contributing to like making the product better than just giving a commentary on. You know, whatever. Like, you know, all like I, you know, I it offended me that Japan made Lupin hate gay people or whatever he said on there. I don't know. I have no idea. But I wasn't sure that CG was actually academic to begin with. But
I think it was actually Savakis that wrote the article, and he like.
Oh, he put his input on it. Yeah, I don't know how he got that relation. The fact that he was able to connected with Justin Savakis on that is actually pretty cool. I mean, like
that article, I read it on the liner notes, and it at the end it goes into like lots of random stuff like gay characters and One Punch Man and stuff. I feel like that's probably what CG told him about.
Oh my gosh.
Because I've heard that Josh said something like Puri Puri Prisoner is CG's favorite One Piece character. And that's like some like buff gay prisoner that's a hero in One Punch Man. And that character was mentioned on the liner notes. Because it's like 20 pages or something. It's like really long.
Oh,
and it goes into like the like long history of like cross-dressing in Japan and stuff.
Oh, is this like a gay representation in anime, and they feel like they this dub, you know, was bashing, you know, gay people because of the time it was made, but now we're in a new era where we quote don't do that anymore or whatever, and you know,
yeah.
Like,
well, I was actually surprised they didn't do something like that on the Angel Tactics Blu-ray, which is the most recent one that came out. But
from Lupin?
The most recent Lupin movie. I think it was from 2003 or something.
Okay.
But I guess because that one, it was not, the gay character was not portrayed as like a massive stereotype. Even though the character was a villain, they were not, they weren't like a dominatrix with a whip or whatever. Like Sedaccio from the 90s. Or the Nazi vampire gay character from the other one from the 90s. Yeah, there are just so many weird gay villains in Lupin.
But this is freaking Monkey Punch. He doesn't care. He's going to make whatever he wants. It's the Japanese being Japanese is the best defense. It's the excuse/defense that people use. It's just like, it's their characters. They let them do whatever they want. If you want to have a series about like positivity in gay people or whatever, then you know, Studio Clamp's there for that or whatever. So then like just have that and you guys can love that. You know, it doesn't have to, anyways, but I ain't going to get into that.
Noticed that on the Angel Tactics one, there's a part where they show like data profiles about the various villains in English, which I think was there in the original Japanese version, because mm-hmm. often the Japanese like to show off their English skills, but
yeah.
They called the character bisexual when they're referring to him as a crossdresser. I think they thought bisexual means like you dress up as the other gender, like you're trying to be both sexes or something. They didn't quite get all the terminology right. It's kind of funny. Bisexual, neither man nor woman, or something like that.
I think there was I've heard this years ago on the Anime World Order podcast where they reviewed Dog Soldier, and there's a part, the OVA is really crappy, but like there's a part in there where it's about the AIDS virus. So the Japanese didn't really understand like what the AIDS was about. So they had like this whole like, they think they put something in the manga where like, you know, they all cover their faces so they wouldn't breathe in the AIDS or something like that. So like something's ridiculous. But like they didn't know. Like they just, they all assumed it was something, you know, like that. Oh, that I think that's how AIDS works. It's not in our country. It's happening everywhere else. And this is like, you know, the early 80s or whatever. So.
Well, you have to keep in mind back then there was a big push to make people think like AIDS is not just something that's being spread on gay people. Anyone could get it any time at any way or something.
Yeah.
To try to destigmatize people with AIDS, and make it seem like it was not just something gay people were getting as a result of being gay.
Yeah.
So I think probably people in Japan, they heard some of these reports from the West about like, you know, you can get AIDS in other ways besides gay sex. And so they were like, well, what are those other ways? Can I breathe it in? You know?
Yeah, they're thinking it's like any other disease. Like I usually get sick by breathing something in my body. I guess AIDS works the same way.
Yeah.
And that's what the creator of Dog Soldier thought. So
they're already predisposed to wear masks. Whenever there's any diseases out there, like SARS and stuff, they were wearing masks.
Yeah.
In Japan, like long before COVID.
Oh, yeah. They've been doing that for a while. A good while.
Because they live in these cramped little cities and stuff, and people are breathing the same air, and it makes more sense to wear a mask there than out in, you know, rural Arizona or whatever, where it's hot and sunny and people are all spread out in the suburbs, you know.
Oh, shoot. So, I will say with Anime Blues Con, it's definitely a party con, and it's a very LGBT positive con. And I say that because, like, so they had 18 plus panels happening at like 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And I'm like, I've never seen that before. Usually 18 plus panels are after like 8, 9, 10 o'clock or whatever, usually at other cons, major ones. And this one, they're like, oh, shoot, start at 5, who cares? This is Anime Blues Con. There was, I remember looking at the schedule, but there was nothing on there that interests me, and there was a lot on there that I was going to avoid, personally. And if that's the people's things, you know, whatever, I just don't want any part of it. But they had a cosplay strip show Saturday night, and it was happening next door, because the game room was in between, like, a big panel area and a main events hall. And as we were leaving the game room, we just hear a bunch of cheering and hooping and hollering or whatever, and then, like, I had people that were in the game room, and the staff were like, all right, I guess I'm heading over to the anime titty show, the cosplay titty show, and I'm going to help staff with that or whatever. And I'm just like, get me the hell away from this place. Like, because the thing is, it's like, okay, like, and I wasn't there. This is an assumption. If I'm wrong, sorry, not sorry. But a lot of the people that are going to do that are people most people wouldn't want to see naked. Like, in terms of body shapes and stuff. And I guess you can slam me for body shaming, but I mean, I think it's, I don't know. That's just an assumption. I wasn't there to see it, and I wasn't not going to be there to see it, Because that is not
well,
my.
Were there a bunch of like 300-pound women with?
All I'm gonna say is I would not be surprised if it was a bunch of 300-pound women trying to show their stuff, and people cheering them on, and a bunch of dudes in their chairs, like, you know, shaking their dicks as hard as possible, and the male juices and seed spread everywhere on the convention's chairs. I did not want to know.
Okay.
That's just my assumption. And I am mostly positive that is probably exactly what happened in there, without me ever stepping foot or even gazing inside that room, because I did not want to know what was going on in there. All I know is just like guys are just like, all right, I guess I'm gonna help out the anime and the cosplay titty show, you know? It's just like nonchalant, like, is that what you're doing? Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Like, I'm just like, all right, we're heading out of here. I need to go to a bar. I need a drink. Do something. So that was the night we're hitting the Beale Street, and I'd rather suffer through that than go to a cosplay strip show or whatever the heck.
So you get to see that girl at Hooters instead.
You know, it's funny, like, she was just like, oh, I didn't know you guys, there was a con going over there, and she's like, oh, I think she was like, oh, I want to check that out, I want to see cosplay, I know about that stuff. And I'm thinking, all you gotta do is show up in your Hooters outfit, and you're more clothed than most of the women at the convention. That was my thought. I didn't say it, but I was just like, you go over there dressed as you are now, you'll get in, and you'll blend right in. As a matter of fact, you'll be more dressed than most of the women over there. So, that was my thought. I kept that to myself, but now there was some interesting stuff. There was one girl that was helping us tear down. She was also like in this, like, you know, like, I mean, like, she had some revealing boobs or whatever in her dress, and she looked cute in it. I mean, she had some weight on her because she had a kid, but like, she was really cool to talk to. So like, we're making jokes, like, well, what was it? Like, we're like, she was helping like stack plushies and like games and stuff, and we were chatting, and I was telling her about like, I was giving her jokes that I heard on Joe Bob Briggs' Last Drive-In Show. And, so like one of them was just like, hey, you know the difference between a bus station and a lobster with boobs? And she's just like, what? And I was just like, one's a crusty bus station and the other's a busty crustacean. And she just like paused and just like her face scrunched up and started laughing. Oh, so what started us with jokes was, she started one with like, hey, what does a chicken wear to a prom? And I was like, I don't know. What is it? And she goes, a hentai.
Oh my God.
And I stood there and I just went, damn, that's good. So she was really cool to talk to. I wish she stayed around longer. I don't know. She said she had a kid and who knows, she's got a man in her life. I didn't see a ring on her finger. Who knows? She says she's from like South Louisiana or whatever, and I'm just like, around the coast or something, and I'm just like, it probably would not work out, but she was really cool to talk to. Maybe I'll see her again, who knows? But we're exchanging jokes.
If you return to Memphis next year.
Whew, I hope she comes to Anime Week in Atlanta. A much better con. Anyways, that's, I'm just kind of thinking out loud on some other stuff. I mean, there's some other stuff that happened too, but I don't really want to divulge too much into that. But, if Anime Blues Con moves to some other venue, even if it's at the freaking pyramid, that pyramid's got to be a better location. Apparently there's a Wahlburgers inside the pyramid. Like, we found that out like the last night we were there. Like, we could have walked over to Wahlburgers and got food at the pyramid, and it would have been a better experience than like some of us going down to Beale Street or like trying to avoid like angry people at the Wesley's bar or whatever. But again, Wesley's was all right. Like, they had like their own like they had their own that Mexican dish with like, it's not burritos, it's tamales. They had their own tamales there, and I had one of their custom ones, which actually all around did not taste that bad. I was like, it's bar food, and I've got two Tokyo iced teas in me. I'm good. I'm in a pretty good mood right now. So, but I never want to go back to that part of Memphis. Like, I'd rather avoid Memphis altogether, but in terms of, like, that area specifically, I don't want to go back if I can help it. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Who knows what'll happen. I don't know if I'm going to be helping these people out still. I mean, like, it's great side money for me when I'm able to do it, because they go to a bunch of cons and sell games and stuff. I don't know how far west they go, but they go as far as, like, Texas for conventions. So they're mostly, like, on the East Coast area. Like, they'll do, like, A-Con and stuff like that, and, like, San Japan and San Antonio. And I've not gone to any of the San Antonio cons. If I go to San Antonio, I'm definitely meeting up with family. And I like to at least have, like, enough money to, like, stay there for a couple of days, or at least be there for a few days with family before I do a convention there. So
the only one I've been to in San Antonio is there's something called Ekman's, which is done every few months, and it's like a toy and comic kind of convention. But I don't think it's the kind of thing where people would come from states away for it.
Yeah,
because it's not really like a big. Even though it's like a big convention center, it's not really like the. It doesn't seem like it's the sort of place where cosplayers flock in, and there's lots of panels. It's not really that kind of thing, you know.
It's a buyer's market.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of thing I prefer anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But, I gotcha.
Yeah.
You know,
one of the toy cons they do in Mesa and Glendale here in Phoenix.
You know, we never heard back from UwuCon. Like, they acted like they were going to do a con, like in the spring and have us over there guests. I haven't heard back from them. And that may not happen, and I'm perfectly fine with that. Let me see what...
Yeah, I don't know what's happened with that. I haven't checked since... I remember... Was it last year that we talked to them?
Yeah, they asked us to join. So let me... So they got the website still up. Let me get a date. The con's in 107 days, whatever that means.
Okay, they assumed our podcast died because we didn't do anything in so long.
I know.
I don't know.
I was just like, how in the hell did you guys find us? Oh, well, we checked podcasts, and you guys are based out of, Phoenix area. You're local. And I'm like, one of us is. I'm on the other side of the freaking country. Like,
yeah, well, I was surprised she knew that I was – well, she thought I was in Chandler still, but that's understandable. Yeah. It's not that far from here.
So, so their sponsors for the convention is Red Bull, V1 Tech, Blood Artisan, Liquid Death, Olympus Games, and 98 – KUPD, Arizona's Real Rock. Okay. So they got Liquid Death as a sponsor for this convention. Liquid Death is the new sparkling water drinks that has like a skull on it. It's actually pretty good.
Well, I understand their con is it's partially food based or something. It's focused on Japanese food or something.
Yeah, they got so far they've got four voice actors coming to this, and I don't.
Who are they?
Taylor Gray, Vanessa Marshall, Keith Silverstein, and Robert McCollum.
I don't know most of them.
I don't know them either.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll go if the timing is right. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. Maybe you can just say, hey,
108 days? Is that
107?
That's late summer, I guess.
Well, hold on.
That's fall.
What the heck? I don't want to count on a stupid calendar. Why can't you guys just put up a stupid date? All right, so 107 days. So
that's 3.5 months from now.
7/14/21. Hold on.
So it'd be Halloween-ish.
28, 35, 42. It's probably gonna be either October or November or something.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I'm checking the internets right now. This is the last weekend of October. The same weekend as freaking Anime Week in Atlanta. I'm not leaving Anime Week in Atlanta. I'm got too much to do there.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm not going to go to your Arizona con.
Oh, well. So, do we want to move on to closing remarks? I kind of want to talk about the situation in Russia.
Okay, shoot, I figure we try to. I can talk about anime we've watched, in terms of I finished up Serial Experiments Lane as the last one, and we'll go ahead and talk about Russia, and we can talk about anime, or maybe.
Oh yeah, I wanted to talk about Gundam Seed a little bit because I rewatched that. Okay. But, and there's the new trailer for the new movie coming out in like 6 months.
So that's gonna so Seed Freedom is a movie.
Yeah, you know how? Well, I guess I can go into this now a little bit. The director of the shows is still alive, but his wife was the screenwriter, mm-hmm. and she got cancer during the production of Destiny, which is why a lot of people think that Destiny kind of falls off near the end with a lot of characters behaving yeah. weirdly. Apparently, she didn't fully develop the scripts, yeah. so the animators kind of had to improvise what these vague notes were on the fly.
Oh, wow.
So you have these weird things like Athrun suddenly decides to kidnap Mei Ren, and Kigali just disappears at the end, and all these weird things happening.
Yeah.
There's all these rumors, like the director was cheating on his wife while she had cancer with Kigali's voice actress, and then the wife wrote Kigali out of the show as revenge against her husband. There's lots of weird rumors like that out there.
Wow.
Anyway, she's dead now, but she apparently had written this movie in like 2006 or something.
Uh-huh.
But it, when it was first announced, but it wasn't fully fleshed out, and so they had to take like years after she died to try to interpret what she was writing and turn it into like a workable movie. So now like 16, 17, 18 years later, they're finally at a stage where they've got a release date and a trailer with some footage, but we don't really know anything about the plot. I'm just assuming based on the end of Destiny that it involves how Kira has now joined Zaft, and Blackus seems to be the leader of Zaft now. And so it'll be, you know, probably some sort of new conflict between Zaft and Earth. That's kind of how it always goes in these things. Somehow Orb will get drawn in, and Kigali and Athrun will have to end up fighting Lacus and Kira, I assume.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of, it's just the whole situation was such a shit show behind the scenes that a lot of people had given up on this ever happening.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up making a 00 movie in the 2000s instead of a Seed movie. And then, you know, then they moved on to, I guess, Iron-Blooded Orphans was, like, several years after that.
Yeah.
And now there's, like, The Witch from Mercury, which I've not seen.
I've seen the first couple episodes of it. That's about it.
I'm kind of waiting. I think it'll probably be on Tsunami at some point. If Tsunami doesn't die. Which might happen.
I got a feeling that could possibly happen, man. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean they're not doing too well with licensing shows lately, but we'll see. So yeah, I had read the manga recently of Seed as well as watching the anime, and I do think the manga fills in a lot of the holes that the original show had.
Mm-hmm.
I read these interviews with the director trying to figure out why certain things happen. And basically he said he wanted to make a super robot show, but the producers forced him to make it a realistic teen drama about war and death and love and sex and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And so basically there's like a conflict between him and his wife over the direction of the show and the producers and the scriptwriter and all these people. And so he had this attitude of it doesn't matter how characters survive. People just want to see these characters again. So all throughout Seed, these things happen that are kind of not explained, like when Kira and Athrun almost kill each other in episode 30, mm-hmm. you see like Kira's burned out cockpit and it seems like he's dead and he's declared AWOL. But then like a few episodes later, he's just suddenly with Lacus in a totally different location and there's no explanation for how he got there.
Mm-hmm.
The manga tries to smooth this over. They totally change certain plots. Right before he goes off to battle in the anime, Flay has like a mental breakdown and kind of starts yelling at him like, "How can you have pity for someone like me? The reason you're not seeing your parents is because you're feeling sorry for me because my father died. Poor little Kira, you know, she's kind of losing it on him." And then in the anime, he says like, "Flay, I think we should just end this." And she goes, "What does that mean?" and runs away. And then right before he goes out to battle, she goes up to him and says, like, "Kira," but she doesn't know what to say. And then he says, "Flay, we'll talk later." And then he doesn't see her again until she dies. In the manga, they made it totally different. He never tries to break up with her or anything. And they actually show that when the battle with Athrun happens, they show that he escaped the cockpit and that he was trying to get back to the ship so he could see Flay again. I actually think this works better than in the anime because it makes it sting more when Flay dies at the end of the show that he was still together with her.
Mm-hmm.
But then they show Reverend Melchior find him on the beach after he's escaped his cockpit, and they show him brought to Lacus, and they show how Lacus had him moved to the mansion, and everything that just isn't explained in the show is explained in the manga. And there's a similar thing with Ulaflaga at the end of Seed. This is especially inexcusable because they show his suit destroyed by a massive beam cannon when he's protecting the Archangel, and then you see even his helmet from his spacesuit floating in space with a crack in it,
mm-hmm.
which strongly implies he's dead because he's not going to be surviving in outer space without a
without a freaking helmet.
Yeah, but then in Destiny, just with no explanation, he's suddenly the super villain that's like replaced Raoul Lacroix as the new Char of the show. He's got a mask on,
yeah,
and long blonde hair all of a sudden, and he's running this like cyber new type lab. I think they call them Exceeds, but they're, you know, these humans that he's been experimenting on, and it's just like, what the fuck? He was like the main lead other than Kira, and he was like a very sympathetic character. And then suddenly he's just alive with no explanation and he's a villain and they just don't explain it at all. Eventually they capture him on the Archangel and he gets his memories back and then he's just like, you know, just reunites with Maru and he says something like, I think I know you. My eyes know you. My ears know you. My, and he kind of looks down at his dick and he goes, oh. Like he remembers fucking her. she just embraces him and she's like, oh, you remember me. Oh. And I just forgive him for running this fucking cyber new type lab and experimenting on people. And they're all like, why did you do all this? And I'm just like, all right, let's start fucking again. It is just the worst reveal ever. Like that he was this villain and they don't explain it at all. He just says like, oh well, you know, they told me I was somebody else and I kind of went along with it. Well, in the manga they showed that they operated on him, that he was nearly dead in space, and that they never showed the cracked helmet in the manga.
The manga has to fix everything.
Yeah, they had to fix all this stuff. So they show that Lord Jabril, the evil madman from Blue Cosmos, found him and experimented on him and changed his mind so he wouldn't have different memories, and they show him on the operating table, and all they explain all this shit that the anime just skipped over because the director was like, "Who cares? We'll just bring characters back if we want to bring them back." So I think that the manga improved a lot, even though it had to like condense two or three episodes to one chapter, and they somehow managed to fix a bunch of like weird shit that was in the original.
Yeah.
But,
here's the thing. Even after all these years with Gundam Seed, it's still going to make a ton of money because it's Gundam Seed. Gundam Seed seems to be, for a long time, Gundam Seed was the most popular, like, Gundam property Bandai had.
Oh, yeah, especially in Japan.
And it makes no sense. Like, I think outside of Japan, people really love Gundam Seed. It's, like, you know, here in America, it's Gundam Wing, followed by Gundam Seed. And I just don't get, like, I could never ever get into Gundam Seed. Even when we watch the compilation films and review those a billion years ago, if you ask me, hey, do you remember that part in Gundam Seed? I said, no, I can't. There's no way.
I actually like it, but it's just, there's so many flaws with it and with how, just the production process of it is just a mess.
Yeah.
But, I think that they're gonna make a lot of money on it because it is nostalgic now.
It's Gundam freaking Seed. It's 20 years old. It's gonna make money.
Yeah, I mean, I've always heard that the Lacus and Kira pairing was very popular in Japan. Mm. If they just do something like a Lacus and Kira wedding or a Athrun and Kingali wedding or something,
yeah,
you know, they'll get all the fangirls out there for it. It'll make a lot of money.
The fangirls, you know, that were fangirls then and they're fangirls now, but now they have children that are like, mom, why do you care about this? Shut up. Urzai! You have your Demon Slayer crap and your love arc stuff and your stupid current anime, and I had Gundam Seed, darn it, and I've never outgrown the Gundam Seed. I am your mother.
And by the way, Kenshin is back to the new anime of Kenshin. That's another great Tom 3 anime. And I think it would be great if they brought that new Kenshin anime to Toonami.
If they're going to do the Kenshin anime, they need to bring in Trigun Stampede. Trigun Stampede isn't done. Like they're doing the second part of the show. I'm waiting for the whole show to be done for me to watch it, because they've only done like the first 12 or 13 episodes, so they got the other half to do.
Isn't it weird CGI art style though?
It's Studio Trigger doing it or something like that. I'm waiting for it to be done, and I'm going to watch. I just want to watch all of it together. So.
Yeah, I'm thinking of some of the funny edits in Seed, because I watched your recordings from TV, and then I watched the uncut version on, because I had to go get the old Anime Legends DVD sets online, which was quite the ordeal. But the new Seed releases from Right Stuff were not something I wanted to support, because they cost you either buy the new dub, which I saw the first two episodes of on YouTube, and I really did not care for the casting. I just don't want to hear like Erica Mendez as Flay. I mean, she is so one note. She's just as loud female characters like Inuyasha's daughter and Yashahime, that kind of character.
Yeah.
And I don't think it works for Flay. But and Max Middleman, the guy from One Punch Man as Kira, I mean, you can't do like an emotional performance like Kira when you're One Punch Man, who is like this stoic guy who never reacts to anything. But anyway, I did like Griffith though as Rao. I thought that was good casting. They got the 90s Griffith. I can't remember the name of the actor, but from the original dub of Berserk.
Oh,
what's his name?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't remember either. But anyway,
the only thing I know about the only thing I know about that original dub was Dr. Eggman as the silly general guy.
Mike Pollock?
Yeah, that's it, Mike Pollock. He played the guy with the blonde buzz cut that was like the comedic relief general or whatever.
Oh,
I thought you remembered. Well, that.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Because Mike Pollock is a New York actor, and Gundam Seed was originally done in Vancouver, the acting. Uh-huh. But there was another Eggman from like maybe like the 90s video games or something. There was like a different Eggman actor. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, I'm trying to remember all the different Eggmans. There's Long John Baldry. He from Adventures of Sonic the Hedgehog. I think he lived in Vancouver.
Well, you were like, every time we watched, like, when we were watching Berserk, like, you were just like, ha, you know, when he died, you were like, ha, R.I.P.
I know what you're talking about now. In Berserk, yes, that's right. Mike Pollock was in that.
Yeah, that's
what I thought you were talking about. A general in Gundam Seed.
No, I don't freaking know Gundam Seed. You ought to know me.
right. I do remember that now. That guy, Mike Pollock, he played that huge. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there you go. Now you're up to speed.
You know, Mike Pollock, he was on the AIM chats. Do you remember Mike Pollock on
that? I never talked to him, but I know that, like, freaking, what was it, like, Kuwabara hated him or for some reason, and he couldn't understand why. That was, like, sort of the running joke for years on the AIM chats, was like, he'd come on, or like, you know, we ran about him on Toon Zone, and he's just like, why do you hate me so much?
Oh, that was Jeff Nimoy.
Okay, we had
Mike Pollock, Eggman. We had Jeff Nimoy. He was the guy who did what's his name, Wolfwood in Trigun.
Wow,
and he also wrote like the scripts for Digimon, and Naruto and Bleach and stuff. And like Kuwabara hated him and thought he was like the worst localizer of all time because of Digimon. He was like mad that he put too many jokes in the Digimon job or something.
Oh my gosh. And now you got the, now you got these like academic YouTubers that are like, oh man, the 4K dub is the most superior dub ever to exist, and we love the nostalgia of the 4K dub. And you know, I'm 37, and I was 7, you know, or like, you know, I'm 25, and I was 5 when I watched the show, and I loved it then, and I love it now. You know, like that kind of crap.
Well, yeah, the thing is, at the time, everybody was bashing on this stuff because they were older fans who had already seen fan subs online. And then they were, like, AKA mad YouTube. That these shows were being adapted for children. Yeah. And now the people who actually saw the children, the shows as children are...
They're the white knights for the show.
Exactly.
All you older fans in your 30s, you don't know what you're talking about. This is the greatest thing I ever saw, and it still is.
Yeah.
And us, it's just like, who cares? Who gives a crap?
There was one other guy. It was Sean Schemmel, voice of Goku.
Yeah.
He was on the chat, and I remember he interacted with Shark and called him a shock jock because Shark kept, making provocative statements or whatever. I don't remember what exactly he did, but he was like, "Hey Goku, how big is your dick?" That kind of shit.
And it's Sean Schemmel, and I figured he would be kind of honest about that. Because isn't he like pretty like lewd anyways or whatever, like all this crap that happened with Kick Vic, and they're like, Sean Schemmel's a piece of crap or whatever.
I don't remember, he might have actually answered it.
Oh my gosh,
that was a long time ago.
Greg Aries would be like, oh, you'll find out on the director's couch, you know, whatever.
Wasn't that Chris Sabat?
Chris Sabat, that was it. They said they had the couch. Uh-huh. They're the whole Kick Vic thing.
I think Chuck Huber accused him of running one of those.
He's probably right.
A Weinstein type thing.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Who knows? But
it was a whole there was so like, much American. Going on back then. Yeah, that whole thing turned into Weeb Civil War. That was an interesting time, 2019, when all that went down.
I was actually surprised that he did not get blacklisted from Funimation after accusing Sabat of that, because he seems to like run the place. You know, he's pretty high up. He's kind of in everything. Mm-hmm. He runs like a voice acting studio and everything. Mm-hmm. But I guess they couldn't recast Android 17 because it's like too prominent of a role in Dragon Ball Super or whatever to suddenly recast somebody over. It would kind of make him seem guilty if he fired the guy after he got accused of having a casting couch.
Yeah, like, what are you hiding there, Chris Sabat?
Yeah. Oh, another one that I've started watching is Votoms. I'm about halfway through Votoms.
Ooh.
I think that's really good so far.
Well, Deckum, I need to catch up on that and rewatch some of it and kind of so we can kind of finally review it after. Oh crap! What was the last Takahashi versus Tim Mito? It's been a while. Let me check our podcast.
Probably been like 7 years or something. Probably.
You're right. Hang on.
I watched Dogrum and most of Lesnar. I need to finish Lesnar,
dude.
Just got re-licensed.
Freaking Discotech is going to put Lesnar out on Blu-ray finally.
Yeah.
Like I am going the minute that goes for pre-order, I'm getting that show. Okay, hang on.
Yeah, Takahashi is great. This whole show, though, with the girl, the perfect soldier girl, Fiona, that just keeps getting captured and over, mm-hmm. It does remind me a bit of the whole Four situation in Zeta Gundam. Trying to rescue the cyber new type girl that you're in love with and all that kind of thing. Except for it goes on for at least the first half of the show so far.
Right,
and then they brought in like a new male cyber new type or perfect soldier in this case in the second arc, and it's kind of strange. There's like an OVA that came out after the show that is set between the first and second arcs, so I had to watch that between the arcs to see how the second cyber new type was born, and he kind of imprinted on the female cyber new type. I keep saying cyber new type, perfect soldier.
Yeah.
The concepts are so identical. But and when he first saw her, because it seems like whatever the perfect soldier first sees, they see them as like a a parent figure or something. So that's why Fiona has the attachment to Chirico.
Yeah.
It's like an animal. Like, okay. Whatever they first see, they think it's their mother.
Yeah. Okay. So are you still through Kumin Jungle arc? Are you past that?
I'm like two episodes left on that.
Okay. God, it's been a minute.
I'm at like episode 25 is the last one I saw. Well, I'll probably finish it tonight. Second arc.
Yeah, I need to rip out. I need to take out because it took me a while to get through Votoms like on my own, and then I got the Blu-ray set from it's not right stuff. It's Sentai.
Mm-hmm. And Section 23 or whatever.
Yeah, made in Japan. Exactly. Made in Japan. Yeah,
there's so many names.
It's the same company.
I know.
Well, now that you told me that, I'm like, shoot, I need to bust that sucker out. All right, so our last...
There are compilation movies on this thing as well, I think. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but they made them at least. They may not be on the Blu-ray. That's true.
I didn't think about that. Anyway, I need to bust it out because I got my Blu-ray case thing in my closet, so...
All right, there's a ton of OVAs on there. There's one that shows his past. I watched that.
Yeah, there's a bunch of
called Big Battle. I watched that.
So Big Battle is, I think, the Star Wars Sandcrawler one, like out in the middle of the freaking desert on the planet. There's two regarding his backstory.
There's some really psycho evil guy that's like another perfect soldier.
Yazan
type character.
Pales and Files is really good. They did one on like these kids in a slum or something that's like separate from Votoms. And then
Metalink?
No, not Metalink. Metalink is not on this. Metalink actually did get a Blu-ray release. Metalink is good, but
does some other company have Metalink or something?
I don't know. I just know in Japan they finally put Metalink out on Blu-ray or something like a couple years ago, and I don't know if it's ever going to come here. Maybe it'll be a separate thing from Discotech. Who knows? Because Sentai doesn't. I don't know if Sentai still has.
I feel like Votoms. Someone else must have licensed it, or else why would it not be on here? It's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Unless it's just not related too closely. I mean, I've heard Chirico's not even in it.
It's in the same universe. I don't see why it's not related, but.
Okay, well, I heard there's one that's like set in an alternate universe called like Votom Finders or something. That's like a more recent one that's on here as well.
Okay, so Shining. Like going back to the OVAs, there's Shining Heresy, which takes place like 10 years after the events of the TV series. So
I've read the summary on that, and it sounded like it involves like selecting a new pope and like
figure.
It's like
yes.
I mean, people say Kira is a Jesus figure, but I mean,
yeah, Chirico beat him to the punch 20 years earlier. Kira.
Yeah, I guess it is the same concept basically. That Kira was like the perfectly genetically engineered coordinator. It's the same kind of thing from Perfect Soldiers. Yeah, I mean, Shining Heresy is taken from that.
Yeah, Shining Heresy has like the space like Catholic religion that came out of nowhere, or it was there, but like they wanted to really expand on it in the OVAs for some reason, especially in Shining Heresy.
Well, there is that one main villain that is that fat guy that wears like a priest outfit, and he's got like a swastika necklace, and he seems to be like a mix of like a Catholic or Buddhist monk. It's kind of weird the way he's designed.
Okay.
And because he doesn't have a cross exactly. It's like a Buddhist swastika, but then his outfit looks like he would be a Catholic monk. But then there's like a scene where he's talking to the general, and they're both like, yeah, we don't believe in God or any of this. Because they're like torturing Chirico in a church, and they're just like, yeah, we're just like using this church for power, and this is just our way of controlling people through the military and the church.
Right.
Then they're just like real blunt about it right in front of this guy they're torturing.
Right.
The show is so cynical and dark, and people are just like constantly blowing up and shit.
I'm going to say this. The next arc, the first half of the arc, is all taking place on a spaceship, and it's like, I don't want to spoil it too much, but if you can get past that, it gets better. But I think you're still going to watch through it. Do what?
The one I'm on now is like Vietnam.
Yeah, that's the Kumin Jungle arc.
Yeah.
That one is probably the best arc, action-wise, in the series.
Yeah, that one has a character that's named Pol Pot Area. I mean... That's like... not real subtle, but they're among them there.
Yeah. Yeah, screw that piece of crap. dang, man, I kind of want to rewatch Votoms again at some point. All right, so going back to the question, when was our last Takahashi versus Tomino? That was May of 2019.
So really? That recently?
Yeah, so four years ago, that recently. the gap between episode 5, round 5, I should say, and round 4, when did we put out
round? What was our last round?
Round 5 was the last round. Round 4...
Well, what shows was it?
It was Panzer World Galliant. Hold on, I'm checking this one out. No, okay, so... Alright, so round 4 was 2016, so there was a 3-year gap. Mm-hmm. And now it's like a 4-year gap? So we're due one of these pretty darn soon. So let me go back to I'm checking the website. So let's go around back to round 5. Yeah, so that was Ore Battler Dunbine and Panzer World Galliant, because I got Dunbine like on sale on Amazon around this time. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it. And then Galliant was like, I've only seen the OVAs, and I think you watched the show. So we did the whole thing.
I don't know about that. I think we both watched the OVAs.
Okay, you're probably right. It's been 4 years. Like, who's...
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But anyway, for a Tomino show to go with Votoms, though, mm-hmm. I'm thinking maybe we could review those Gundam dub compilation movies, because I saw those recently. And that dub is pretty entertaining. The early dub with what they call Star Shaw. They have the Duchy of Zeon, so the Principality of Zeon.
The one with British Bright and Steve Bloom as Char.
And Sayla kind of has a weirdly maybe British accent. I don't know exactly. Yeah. She just kind of sounds strange. It's very different from just all the voices are very different from the TV series dub.
Okay, because I was ripping those tapes.
You did like one of them, right?
I only did
like
one
5
of them.
Years ago.
Yes, and I haven't gotten back to them, and they're back in like the big VHS storage bin in storage, and it's a hassle to get to all of it. But
well, they actually are on archive.org. I found out. I actually talked to the MySpleen admins about whether or not I could have permission to upload those dubs, and they did give me permission. I just had to show them that. Look, I have the DVDs and the Blu-rays too, and they don't have the dub on there. Bandai wants this thing buried. And I showed them a comparison between the TV show and the movies, and told them about how the actor for Char is different, and how the in the original they had Bloom, and then their response was, "Oh, there's somebody on the forum on the site that is really in love with." That voice actor and is obsessed with Tom too. And it's like, yeah, I happen to know that person. I had a role in getting that person banned from your Discord server. We traded horror stories about the Swayzak girl.
Oh gosh.
Yeah.
I
don't know if you remember this character, but she was like insane.
Yeah, I remember her. I remember her. Yeah, we talked about her.
Yeah, I had to tell them about it. How this woman would always be sending us these weird messages about how Tom and Rosie the Robot are in love and all this fucked up Swayzak fan fiction that she wrote and stuff.
I'm actually checking my spleen now. Well, first of all, I'm checking it because I really want to get the latest Last Drive-In with Joe Bob Briggs because I watched... Because they came back like 2 weeks ago or whatever, or about 2 weeks ago.
There was an anime one. I think he did Perfect Blue last weekend. I didn't watch it yet.
Okay.
It was on right after Downstream some movie.
Holy crap.
Oh, we watched Cool World. That's what it was.
Oh, cool. You know, like Cool World gets a bunch of crap, and I get it. But I there's something about that movie I really, really like. Like, I've seen it, like, I think twice.
Oh, yeah, it's fun.
It's just I understand like it didn't do well, but like the concept of it is really solid, and like I don't understand why
Roger Rabbit is considered a classic and that one is considered shit when they're very similar.
That's a very fair point. I mean, I don't know.
It's because Roger Rabbit did well and Cool World didn't, so people rationalize. They construct a concept around it, like, well, it bombed because it was shit, you know? But the thing is, like, nothing Bakshi did was ever really a big blockbuster, I don't think.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the most successful thing he did? Maybe Lord of the Rings? And he didn't even get to adapt the other movies. He only did, like, the first half of it.
Right.
After that, it's like Fritz the Cat or something. But, you know, like, how much money could that have made when it was rated X? How many people were seeing furry pornography in film in theaters in 1969 or whatever, you know? That became a cult classic later, I think.
That is true, yeah. I'm just checking. Well, what's this Beavis and Butthead edited and unedited episodes from 1993?
What, is this on MySplane or something?
Yes.
Oh, I think I saw this. I think somebody has a tape where... they have, like, two airings of the same episode on one tape, and, like, they maybe aired at different times of the day or something, so there's a scene that maybe it involves fire or something like that, and it was cut out of one of the airings. I don't know. They were posting about it on the MySplane Discord at some point.
Interesting. Okay.
There's some episodes that are banned from Beavis and Butthead because they involve fire, because Beavis is so obsessed with fire. They don't want kids to, like, watch it and then, like, set their school on fire or something. Fire, so they can only air those episodes late at night.
Well, what was it? The remake, it was the fact that, like, there was a fire spirit out of a dumpster that talks to Beavis. And he's like, Beavis, I've always been there for you. You've always trusted in me or something like that.
Yeah, the new seasons are actually good.
I've seen clips of, like, the... it's old Beavis and Butthead.
Oh, the middle-aged ones. Yeah, those are funny too.
Yeah, those are great.
They get gay married because they think it'll get them to pick up chicks. And then there's all these like liberal women that like want to hang out with them now, and then they start like making advances on them, and they're like, "What? I thought you guys were like totally cool, but you're not really gay. Oh no." They like punch him in the face. Yeah. They adapted it well to modern times. It's not like sanctimonious LGBT propaganda like Rocco's Modern Life, that thing where it was like the whole thing was a special about some new original character.
No, like, transgendered or something. So that episode was just like them trying to get a license or an identification. And then it just kept, they answered it in a way that made them sound like they were gay, and the person, like, at the county courthouse was just like, well, I just don't know, understand why people just can't accept who you are, or something like that.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, we're trying to get in there, we're being discriminated, and...
Yeah.
I need to go through, just watch that.
There's so many great misunderstandings. There's one where they sign a petition to have their own building demolished. And then they're like wandering around outside and they're like, I thought we lived near here, but there's nothing here now. You know, they're just like totally dumbfounded about what they did to their own building.
I gotta go watch all this stuff at some point.
Yeah. there's another one where they attach Tom Anderson's like a hook to the door, and then the other end of the hook to Tom Anderson's truck because they accidentally got locked out of the house, and then he like drives off with the door hanging from behind the truck and like a tree that the door hits, and he's like driving all around. And he's so deaf and old that he can't even tell he's done this. And then the cops, all show up and, tell him, like, get out with your hands up now. And he's like, what in tarnation are you pulling me over for?
What in the hell are you talking about, officer? No, the last one I saw was, apparently, like, they went hunting with Tom Anderson, and all they want to do is shoot the gun. So then Tom Anderson gets into this long-winded speech about him and his son or something like that. And he's like, you boys, I just feel like I can really connect with y'all out here in nature. And then they just take the gun and go off in the woods. And then, like, Butthead is operating the gun, but he doesn't have it, like, against his shoulder because they don't know what they're doing. So the butt of the gun is, in the, like, right in front of Beavis's face. And then Beavis is like, all right, you know, like, you got to count down. Like, you know, ready, aim, fire. And then, like, as soon as he was about to say fire, then, yeah. And then the kick in the butt knocks Beavis in the nose. He's like, ah! And then Butthead's just like, damn it, I got to go find the bullet. And then Tom Anderson starts shooting at Beavis, at Butthead, because he thinks he looks like a deer. Yeah. And he's just like, I couldn't find the bullet, but I found like 8 others out there in between the trees or something. And Tom Anderson's like, well, boss, it looks like we didn't get lucky today, but that's just part of hunting. Let's go home.
They've also got these little segments with Tom Anderson war stories.
Yes!
That they put in.
Oh!
And he'll be like fixing a sink in the middle of like a firefight.
Yes! No, I freaking showed that to like my brother and a friend of ours in a Telegram chat. And my brother goes, holy crap, that's our dad! No, let me explain. So, like, yeah, the first one, the Tom Anderson stories, I want to see more of those. Those are so great. The first one was them going to, like, the most bloody battle in the Korean War. And Tom Anderson turns the U-boat, or the, not the U-boat, the, the freaking boats to transport the troops on. The landing craft or whatever around, because there's rust spots.
Aircraft carrier or something like that.
Yeah, there's rust spots on there, and he's like, we need to take care of that before it becomes a major issue. And then he's just like, that day I saved that boat from getting rust spots, and then 3 weeks later it got blown up in the next battle and killed 50 men. And then, and then, yeah, then the next one is like one war story was, and it was him like inside of a house during the middle of a gunfight trying to repair the water trap on a sink for a Korean kid, and then everyone dies except for him. And he's just like, well, if Chen Ling survived that fight, he sure as hell would have been blown up by the piping and the bad piping from the plumber about a month later. So good thing I was there. And it's just like, oh God. I catch this stuff on YouTube and I'm just like, holy crap. Like, forget the important thing that's happened. Let's hyper focus on this minor crap that doesn't mean anything except for Tom Anderson. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
Those segments are just an excuse for him to do that Hank Hill voice again.
I know. They're fantastic. Like, I just like the fact that, like, he's telling a story and he's got his dog passed down the carpet because he's so long-winded the dog goes to sleep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dog is always shown there just fast asleep. Like, no one is listening to the story.
Oh. Oh, that's good stuff.
I also love how he does not know that Beavis and Butthead are the ones who are always causing him trouble.
Yeah, that's the comedy relief right there.
There's Buford and Bornolio out there causing all sorts of mayhem, but I know you two are good boys, and you wouldn't do anything like that now, would you? There's another one where this, I think it was the last episode that where they, there's this like, very nice middle class black family that invites them over to, play video games. And they keep coming up with things to do, like go on a picnic and stuff. And the son of the family just wants them to go. And, they keep, doing all these lewd things in front of the parents, and they're like, well, it's good that our son has some friends that are more outgoing and open than he is. And, you know, really relate to when he's talking about TP for his bunghole. He's so honest with who he is. He's like some upper class, like black liberal family or something. But the son is like really embarrassed by them and does not want to be friends with them. And they keep, but they're there because they want to play some video game, and they keep getting drawn away by the family wanting to have dinner with them and stuff. And
I've seen the clip.
It's kind of a weird premise for the episode, but like, it's just so funny.
I've seen the clip where they're like apparently going under, like the old Beavis and Butthead going under for a vasectomy, and they're like having these visions of like what it's like to have kids. So like for Butthead's vision, he's like super buff, and like the freaking, like his one son brings his teacher over there, and she's like, just writes a note like, I want to do you or something. He's like, yep, this is pretty good. I can keep having kids. And then Beavis's dream is like, he's got all his kids over, and then like Fat Butthead and his kids come over, and he's like, oh, look, kids, this is the Buttheads. And then Butthead's like, we're here to kick your ass. And they just get into a fight at the doorway. And Beavis is just like, I'll go get the Dr. Pepper. We need to have more of these family outings. And then they're like questioning, like, do they really want to go through the vasectomy?
Oh, you have to see. Yeah, that one is funny. You have to see the one where Beavis gets all these pins put in his face, and he looks like Pinhead from the Hellraiser movie. And he's just walking around, and then he goes to like a fabric store to get more of them, and starts putting them all up and down his arms and legs, and he's just totally covered in pins. And eventually, he puts them in his dick.
Holy shit. Oh my gosh.
There's so many amazing moments in this season.
Weren't you going to talk about something, Russia crisis or some bullcrap?
Oh, closing but that's remark. Too dark to talk about now.
Yeah, no, we're in a good...
Well, it is kind of funny, though, the whole general thing as well.
Oh, you talk about the guy that was trying to start a coup in Russia and then pussied out, and then like, oh, I'm going to go to Belarus for the rest of my life in exile.
Yeah, I mean, apparently he's not even... I don't know. I mean, they're using Belarus for God knows what reason. They've like put nuclear weapons there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they've been using it throughout the war, but they're like more and more now. I don't know what's going to happen there, but I'm not even sure if he's in exile, because there was like a report the other day that he met with Putin. So I think he's allowed to go to Russia, and even though, you know, a few weeks ago we thought he was about to march on to Moscow. I mean, he was like halfway there, and then he suddenly decides, I'm not gonna go through with this. I'm just gonna go to Belarus. And
yeah,
all of a sudden,
he's like, he runs a mercenary group. He's not tied to Russia. He can do whatever he wants. And I'm like, can somebody do something over there? Like, what the heck is going on? I'm like, fine, start a coup. This is good. I'm breaking out the popcorn. All right, Putin's gonna get overthrown or decapitated. Everything's gonna go in a riot. It already is. Just somebody do something over there. And he's just like, no, I ain't feeling it. I will go to Belarus.
The weird thing is, there's no reason for why he gets up as far as I can. Oh, hold on.
Did you break your mic?
Hold on, my head. As far as I can tell, there's no reason for why he gave up, because he was not getting significant resistance even, really.
Yeah, he plowed through that son of a gun. Yeah.
They're just walking into these bases, I think it was called Rostov, this city they took, kind of Russia-Ukraine border. They just kind of came in, and they were like, hey, we're in charge now. And they're like, all right. You know, they didn't even really resist. There's like a video where he's talking to these, like the Russian general that was in charge there. And he's kind of just like scolding the guy, like, hey, you really should have given us more weapons. And like, you guys blew up a bus full of children. What's that about? And like, he's kind of like, yeah, I didn't know about that. No, sorry. And then he just eventually, I guess, lets the guy live. But, you know, it's like, is this how you guys do your wars over there? You know, you just let people engage in an insurrection, and then there's like no consequences. You just let him go back to the front. Like, what's going to stop him from doing this again? You know, like, Stalin would have had this fucker killed, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you think of Putin as being like the new Stalin or Hitler or something. You know, he's always being portrayed that way by the media, like he's this real hard ass that's going to conquer the world. You know,
yeah.
But then he doesn't even like take out this mercenary that tried to take control over his own war from him. Like, how does that work? You know. Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't know. It's still going on.
It's just
on.
Insane.
Yeah, it seems like Ukraine's getting their country back or what they can. I have no idea. Whatever you've been posting up is usually like all the information I get.
The thing is, I've been watching this whole Ukraine-NATO thing closely because mm-hmm. that's going on right now. Summited some European country right now about the future of NATO. They just added Sweden and Finland and all these countries up there are becoming NATO members, but apparently Germany and the U.S. are still against Ukraine joining NATO. Biden said that they can't add Ukraine until the war is over, and you know, Germany has the same position. So that's not going to happen, but, you know, they have some weird thing, like they, you know, they're not going to add them to NATO, but they're just going to keep giving them weapons endlessly.
I don't get that.
Provide some sort of it's Biden logic that they can't afford.
It's like, okay, you don't want to add them to this organized union, so then, like, they can be like, okay, now we can just, like, basically blow Russia off the map. And so then it's like, okay, what's really going on? Like, come on.
Well, then there's also Lindsey Graham is trying to get this bill through Congress to make them like a bill approving NATO membership for Ukraine. But I don't think you can even really do that without the approval of the president. I mean, because mm-hmm. all of NATO has to agree, and that it doesn't just include the Senate. It includes the president too, and unless they have some like veto-proof majority, maybe or something, they can persuade Biden to do it. But and Biden keeps saying, if we directly bring them into NATO, then we have to send troops over there because of Article 5, and then we're in a direct military confrontation with Russia.
Yeah,
and it's pretty clear that Putin is considering using nuclear weapons right now, or at least blowing up nuclear power plants, because there's all these images of the mines on top of the Zaporozhye plant, and we already saw him blow up the dam a few weeks back, maybe, unless it was Ukraine, but it seems like it was Russia, because they controlled that dam for a long time, and I don't know how Ukraine would have gotten in there when Russians occupied it. So it's kind of like, well, how much are you really going to push Putin, and how much do we have at stake in Ukraine to be willing to risk him going nuclear on us? And, you know, Trump is certainly running against that. And I saw Trump Jr. actually was tweeting at Lindsey Graham, like saying that if we get drawn into this NATO alliance with Ukraine, that means nuclear war. I mean, it kind of just does, you know? Like, you can't really do that when the war is already ongoing. It's supposed to be like a deterrent alliance, you know? Like,
right.
Don't cross people if we're in this alliance. It's not like a retroactive thing. So, I don't know. I just think it could have gotten real bad, but I don't think they're going to add Ukraine to NATO yet. I think they're just going to enlistly send them hundreds of billions of dollars of military equipment, which Putin just seems to be okay with. I mean, he hasn't really retaliated against the West for doing this, as far as I can tell. Unless maybe he blew up that pipeline, but, you know, even that's not clear. I think that probably was the CIA or Ukraine or the UK or something.
If he blew up an oil pipeline, our gas prices would be like $10 a gallon by now or something stupid. I don't know.
Well, it was the pipeline that was in Europe that was like, it was not even running because they shut it off at the start of the war. But there was all this gas in it or whatever that came out into the ocean. I can't remember the name of it. It was Nord Stream, I think is what it was called.
Okay.
But, it, you know, there have been all kinds of war crimes on both sides. I mean, Ukraine blew up a bridge to Crimea, and they probably blew up the pipeline. They've done all kinds of stuff too, and it's kind of like, well, do we really want to give them all these weapons when we don't know how they're going to use them, when they're trying to draw us into their conflict?
Yeah.
But, you know, and on the other hand, if they don't have the weapons, is Putin just going to steamroll them, and then when is he going to stop? It's just, the situation is so fucked, I don't even know how you can get out of it. Like Trump says, on day one, I'll call them, and that'll be over, but I don't think it's that easy.
Yeah.
I mean, it'd be nice if that was true, and he really does have good enough relationship with Putin to do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's kind of no way to know, because we haven't even tried to negotiate with Russia. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think there's been any talks at all with Russia since the war began, which is insane to think about. But I guess their attitude is, well, we don't talk to the aggressor or something, but then how is the war ever going to end if there's never any negotiations?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when Zelensky says he wants to even take Crimea back. That's just not going to happen. I mean, Russia has had Crimea for 10 years. They have the major military base there. The population there is, vast majority is Russian and supports being in Russia.
Yep.
And they're more directly connected to Russia than the other parts of Ukraine. So I don't know how, on earth he thinks he's going to be able to take that region back. But, you know, I guess he just thinks, well, he'll just get endless support from the West and he can do whatever he wants. But, and he did cancel the elections recently. So he's trying to be like Putin, where he's just going to be in there forever until he dies or something.
Yep.
I mean, he's already shut down all the opponent political parties and all the opponent media and everything.
But he's been doing that for years though, right?
Yeah, he's been a dictator for years.
Yeah, exactly. I
mean, that's why the whole thing about Ukraine being a free democratic country against Putin's despotism is kind of bullshit. They're both just corrupt mafia countries.
Yeah, they're both the same.
Yeah. Fuck them both. Okay, are we ready to end it there?
Yeah, just let them nuke each other or whatever, and just, like, we can just watch.
Yeah. Send Tom Anderson over there. He'll fix it. The problem was just a leaky sink and Putin's bathroom was causing him to be upset.
I was going to give like a quick review of Serial Experiments Lane since we're talking about anime watching.
Okay, sure.
I finished that up and I can't tell you exactly what that show is totally about on a first watch. And I watched the show like at night. So
I don't know either.
Yeah, so like I was already like, you know, passing out in the middle of episodes because it's so slow paced.
I don't really know what it's about.
No, there was a girl.
I've seen it. I just don't know.
Yeah, so there was a girl at the con that had a Serial Experiments Lane. I was like, oh, I like your shirt. I just finished that show. And she's like, what'd you think? And I said, it's interesting. And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, I just. Yeah, I was like, everyone, like, it's like, seemed like, you know, like, people, you know, it was there, I've known about it for years, but it didn't seem like anybody talked it up until, like, recently. Like, oh, Lane is such an essential 90s, anime, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, visually speaking, that show is really good looking. Like, there's some really good visuals in that show, that's interesting, but if you're trying to tell me what the story is... No, I can't tell you. It's not on a first watch. Like,
well, it's like some girl. She's like using the internet. That's kind
of
it, right?
It seems like the more she uses the internet, there's like two of her, like Lane or whatever. So then there's like a personality, like herself in the real world, or maybe it's a fake real world that she's like socially awkward or whatever, and doesn't do much. And then they take her to like a club, and there's a club shooting, and she's unscape, and then like after that it's like the world she thought she knew didn't exist. Like her sister goes like in like crazy and becomes like an introvert, and her family just like disappears or something, and then she keeps adding computer crap to her room, and it's outgrowing from the side of the building, which should be like a building hazard violation or something in Japan, and no one says anything about it. And then she meets a guy who's trying to be like God and the computer world. And then the girl that commits suicide in the beginning was like, I don't know, man. Like, she was like, all like, it was trying to connect all to that, where like she was really connected to like the wired or the internet or something. And she couldn't relate to anybody in the real world, and she killed herself or something stupid. And I don't know, like, there was like these like two secret agent guys with like these big stupid looking visors on their head that are watching her. And that's all I remember. I don't know.
You know, hearing you describe all this, it makes me think about how the same director did Digimon Tamers, and I guess Jerry, that character, is actually kind of based on Lane.
Holy crap.
That guy got in trouble a few years ago for, he did like a Digimon audio drama or something, but he had the villains be cancel culture and like, normies or something like that.
What?
And it was about, they had that story be about like how 9/11 was fake or something. He's like this really like right wing conspiracy theorist.
Nice. That's
behind Lane and Digimon. And there were all these like really triggered millennials who grew up watching Lane and Digimon that were like, what? I can't believe he's a fascist or whatever. the guy's definitely a bit unique, and I don't think anyone can really understand what he's trying to say with some of his shows. They just, he has some obsession with like young girls and cyberpunk kind of themes, I guess. And
I mean, I haven't looked at what this director's done. Like, what has he done the like since After Lane or whatever?
I have to look up what else he's done since Lane, okay. Other than Digimon. I think he did Lane first. I cannot remember his name. He kind of reminds me in a way of Satoshi Kon, though.
Yeah, I kind of got that vibe too. Let me look up. All right, let's look this up. I am
Ryutaro Nakamura.
Okay, let me see here.
He did Legend of Crystania, the motion picture, Serial Experiments Lane, Sakura Wars.
Okay. If it's the Sakura Wars, like, OVAs, then, I mean, those are actually pretty good.
I think it's a TV series, maybe, because it's 2000.
All right, so Wikipedia, we've got, Colorful.
It's a 2000 TV series.
Colorful was like...
Colorful, I don't know what that is.
It involves like women or something with panties. Okay, so... hold on. All right, the manga was adapted into a 60-episode anime television series by Triangle Staff in 99. Episodes are composed of vignettes typically involving men and teenage boys attempting to catch a glimpse of women's panties and or look down their blouses. The episodes are fast-paced and short, about 7 minutes each. In North America, the anime was licensed by ADV Films. That's what I thought I knew. Oh, I knew Colorful.
Of course, he did this. See, the obsession with young girls—that's a telltale sign. If there's like, if there's like a Puru type character or something in your anime, that's probably a sign the director is like a pedophile or something, or they're like spying on women on the train or something.
All right, so but
that happens over and fucking over with these anime directors.
Okay, dude, but he hasn't been caught yet, so it's okay.
I retract my allegations.
Okay. he did something...
He just makes anime about doing this. He doesn't really do it himself. he didn't do any research.
He directed Kino's Journey, Country of Illness for You. I haven't seen anything of Kino's Journey. Something called REC Rec. I don't know anything about that. Disperia? Oh, it's a suspended project. Okay.
Hmm.
Oh, so
you
he,
know this may
okay,
not be
so
the,
he died
this is
in
not
20,
the same guy.
He died in 2013. Ryutaro Nakamura. So
yeah, it must be the screenwriter. It is Chiaki Konaka. That's the one I was thinking of, not the director.
Okay, hang on.
I go on Konaka's page and it mentions Digimon Tamers and Helsing. That's the guy I was thinking of.
Okay, well, all right. So this. Shoot. Chiaki.
Here's the controversy section. In 2021, Konaka wrote a stage drama for Digimon Tamers' 20th anniversary that was performed at DigiFest 2021. an official Digimon event held annually on August 1st. The drama featured the cast of the show being confronted by a physical manifestation of political correctness that uses counterculture as an attack, cancel culture as an attack. This brought attention to the blog post meant for retrospective commentary on Digimon Tamer, in which he discussed conspiracy theories and sparked international controversy among internet Digimon circles. In response, Konaka posted a statement in English addressing overseas fans on August 8th, 2021 to explain circumstances and apologize for triggering a divide among the fandom.
Good.
I think he may have been into like QAnon stuff too. I'm not sure. But yeah, he was really into the conspiracy theories. It's pretty funny. And people got really angry about it.
All right, so such works that he's done are as Armitage 3, the screenplay, the 2003 Astro Boy. He worked on Big O, Bubblegum Crisis Tokyo 2040 screenplay, Devil Lady. So there's Digimon Tamers and Digimon Adventure 02. Gas Soraki, he worked on the script for Gas Soraki. That explains a lot.
And also, he did a Gamera movie.
There's Giant Robo. He worked for Serious Composition. I did the script for Magic Users Club, most of it. Parasite. So Parasite Dolls is the like spinoff of like Bubblegum Crisis, so that kind of makes sense. So he worked on the script on that. He did
Razaphon.
Yeah. Okay. I haven't seen.
Right, it's like Ava.
Yeah, but like apparently a better story. And then there's
Yeah, it is actually pretty good.
And then there's Technolize. And then Vampire Princess Mew, I guess the TV
series. Yeah, I haven't seen Technolize, but I think it is similar to Lane.
Whoa, he worked on a video game? I didn't know Serial Experiments Lane had a video game for the PlayStation.
There's a game. It probably never came to America.
Oh, no, it would never would. It would be... seems interesting. I'd have to check this out. Holy cow. It's probably going to be a text-heavy game. All right, gameplay. The game was designed as a network simulator which the player could navigate and explore Lane's journey between real life and online. The creators themselves did not describe it as a game, but as a psycho stretch where? I'm intoxicated a little bit. Incorporating visual novels and non-linear multimedia elements, the gameplay is limited to unlocking pieces of information and then reading, viewing, and listening to them with little to, or no puzzle needed to unlock. So this is just like a game, if you know Japanese text and language, then you can play it. If it's going to add to the story, it seems like it's a game that they made to explain Serial Experiments Lane even further. Is the way I take it.
It's probably necessary. Notice that there's stuff in a lot of these old anime that is only explained in games. Like a lot of stuff about Ava is
yes. There's so many Evangelion games, but really Evangelion 2, and I think there's the PSP adaptation is the same thing as the Evangelion 2 game that apparently is supposed to explain like nearly all the lore of Evangelion. Is the way I've understood it for years.
The thing is, I kind of... It's like, even if you play this game, you're not going to understand it anyway, because it's never been translated to English.
Correct.
By, well, at least officially. Maybe there are fan translations of these things. I don't know.
Right.
But you just have to rely on people on, like, an Ava wiki or something that say, oh, well, like, trust me, I've played the game, and I know Japanese, and it says that the true meaning of this scene is
Excuse me, I'm the expert on Evangelion storytelling and video games. Let me tell you what it actually means. Yeah, those kind of people.
Yeah.
Okay, look, I may be crap-talking them, but, I mean, they do serve a purpose. We can at least have... I mean, they translate something. I don't know how accurate it is, but at least it's better than nothing.
Oh, that reminds me that speaking of Gundam Seed earlier, there's some stuff that's only revealed in games for that. Apparently,
oh my god,
you know, Flay's father is killed early in the series,
right?
And it's kind of not clear why he's on some military ship. Apparently, it's revealed that he's He's actually a member of Blue Cosmos, which is the anti-coordinator hate group that's running the Earth. But this is only in a game. And so there's also weird stuff. Like, at one point when Flay gets kidnapped by Rao, she says, Daddy? When she first hears his voice. And it's just never brought up again in the show. Apparently, you know, this may have been some dropped plot line that Rao has some connection to her father, but they just don't explain it. I don't know if this is explained in any games or anything. They just removed that part from the manga entirely. They cut out the part where she gets captured and says that. But there's just, like, so many things that got changed at the last minute. Apparently, she was supposed to pilot the Rouge Gundam, and then they instead decided to give it to Kigali. And Kigali does not really do anything with that Gundam. She kind of just floats around crying a lot. There's a scene where Kira's trying to get Atherin back to his side from Zaft in Destiny, and he yells, Kigali's crying right now! And it's kind of like, yeah, that's happening continually throughout the entire series.
Yeah, she does that quite a bit.
Yeah.
It's
a bad sign for your show if you have to explain this stuff in a game, though. It's the same for Ava. I feel like there's just so much stuff in there that Ono did not properly explain. That other people have to pick up his pieces and try to put it together. You don't even know whether to trust that information because you don't know whether that's what the original people had in mind. Or if this is some fan making the game that did not consult with Ono about this stuff and just it's somebody else working at that company that had their own ideas for how it would play out. You know, even if it is considered canon or whatever because it's an official product, you don't always know whether a video game is actually compatible with the story of an anime. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess it's good Ono got to do those rebuild movies, but, I mean, even those, they're a different continuity, so they don't really explain any of the plot holes in the original show. They just do their own thing. It's like a total reinterpreted world, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm actually surprised, thinking back, that they have not done more with Lane. I mean, considering it's still popular, it seems like everything gets a sequel or a reboot or something.
Yeah.
It's kind of surprising they've not done, like, another anime of Lane. Maybe it's not as popular in Japan. I don't know.
If it's going to be popular, it's got to start in Japan. They're not going to care about what Westerners think.
Yeah. I watched it probably 10 years ago or something now, and I don't have any specific memories about the plot. I mean, I kind of just remember this girl is... Does she dress up in, like, bear pajamas or something?
Yes. And she mopes around.
She seems very childish.
Yeah.
It's, like, a little disturbing.
It seems like the more she builds up her computer and the more she's tapped into it, the more she seems to, like, kind of grow up and talk more and have a personality, and then people are like, oh, you're like a different person, and people are comparing her to this someone else that looks just like her, and it is, or something like that. I don't know. Like, the last episode was like she met her friend. It was like a time skip or something where she met her, the friend that cared about her the most in high school had like no knowledge of who she was, and they met like on like a bridge or something, and they're like, do I know you or whatever? And so, like, her friend was, like, more mature, and Lane stayed the same age. Because, like, her friend, like, was in her 20s, and she had a boyfriend or something, and they were out shopping or whatever. So it's just kind of like, all right.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, like, she, by being online, she, like, created a digital version of herself that never ages, because the stuff you post online as a child is always there. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of, there's like a digital footprint of yourself that then comes into the real world somehow.
Right.
I don't know. That's one way to interpret it, I guess. But I haven't seen it in so long that I'm just guessing based on what you said. Because I don't really understand why there'd be two of her either. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's people that have done a deep dive and try to understand the plot and stuff. And they've played the visual novel or whatever on the PlayStation. It was all very obscure to me. I mean, it was very much stylized kind of show. Where it's almost like it doesn't even matter what the plot is, and it's kind of all about the vibe. I guess Dot Hack Sign is kind of the same way, mm-hmm. where it's just about putting you in a sort of, it's almost like a psychedelic kind of show. You know, it's very much like, not plot driven as much as, just it's an experience. Mm-hmm. I guess it's the opposite of Votoms in that way, because Votoms is like a, you know, it's a kind of a straightforward military show, and like Chirico is not a, he's not exactly like the most complex character, you know. He's very stoic. He has one objective, which is to save Fiona. Mm, and Fiona, and that's kind yeah. of, he just like joins whatever side he has to in order to try to get to her. And then she like flakes out at the last second and goes back to her captors like over mm-hmm. and over. But eventually it does seem like they're finally together now after that scene where the he has like this asshole commander in Vietnam that's like committing all kinds of war crimes and stuff. And mm-hmm. and the commander ends up having Fiona, and then he's got like a knife to her, and then Chirico sneaks up behind him. And they get into a fight, and he throws the guy into the river, and he tells everybody, oh yeah, I killed that guy. Because the other guys are like, where is he? He could easily have just said, oh, I don't know, I lost track of him. Instead, he says, oh, I killed him. And then Fiona has to come up and say, oh, well, what happened was the guy was trying to attack me, and then Chirico knocked him into the river, and he got washed away. And the guy's not even dead. Like, they show like an episode or two later that he's still alive. But Chirico's just like, yeah, yeah, I killed him, even though he didn't. and then all the other guys in his unit are just like, oh, yeah, well, all right. You know, he kind of had it coming. He was kind of an asshole. We'll just join up with you. And then they shoot down the military that they were in, the helicopters from the military, when they come to check up on them. They're like, firing rockets at them. They just suddenly defect and join up with Chirico.
Yeah.
It's not like Chirico's a charismatic guy. He's, like, totally stoic.
Yeah, there's no personality.
Tells them he murdered the guy.
Yeah, there's no personality to Chirico. He's just kind of like, he just does a mission and that's it. Like, there's nothing really like deep. It seems like the characters around him are the ones that have the most personality, and Chirico is just kind of like, yeah, I'm gonna kill some people. I don't really care. I mean, I just want to protect Fiona. I don't really care. Who are you?
Yeah, Chirico says stuff like, I'm here because I only feel at home around blood and guts or something. Like, he says that kind of dark shit, like,
yeah.
in his narration. And I guess it's just the way he is wired, but, yeah. He's not exactly the Amuro type or whatever who's gonna, like, cry after he kills somebody, you know?
You need to watch Pales and Files, because, like, there's sort of this thing where they give Chirico, like, you said, like, he's like a god or something. I don't want to ruin it, but like, if you watch Pales and Files, there's like a reason why like Chirico is so special, because of like how nearly invincible he is. And
yeah, they've made that pretty clear. There's like a scene where he gets shot and they think he's dead, and then he just like, his eyes open up and he just gets up and he's just like, all right, I'm okay now. So people like make fun of Kira for surviving everything in Seed, but like Chirico can survive literally anything.
So apparently, Colonel Paleson in the show, and you're gonna find him in Paleson Files and all the OVAs.
Yeah, I've seen him in a couple of OVAs.
Right. Okay. So he's the one that has like this whole like study of like that one soldier that's like one out of like a million or a billion that cannot die. And Pales and Files, it's like they take these like records of soldiers that have a high survivability rate and put them all in a unit. And so, like, I don't want to spoil too much, but Pales and Files is really good. And
so, like, this is like a multiple episode OVA that came later,
I think,
right?
Yeah, yes. It's got like the CGI anime thing, but okay. It's solid, actually. Let me look up Pales and Files.
I saw like. There were two of them that I saw that had red shoulders in the name. One of them was set between 13 and 14, and one was set before the show started. And I also saw Big Battle. So right. Those were the first three OVAs. Right. And then I saw that after that, there was one other OVA series on that same disc, and it was the one about like Kiriko becoming the Pope or whatever. I didn't fully get into understanding what that one was about because I didn't watch that one. I just read the summary on the back of the box or something.
Right.
But yeah, I'll get to it after I watch the rest of the main series. I only watched Big Battle out of sequence because I had read that it doesn't have much to do with the main plot anyway, and so you can just watch it.
Right.
So I was like, all right, well, I already watched these other two on here. I'll just watch that one as well.
Okay, so Peleson Files is like 12 episodes.
And it's from the 2000s with CGI and stuff?
Yes, but it's not bad looking at all. I don't think it's bad looking.
That's the one thing I'm worried about with the Seed movie more than anything is that they're going to have like bad looking CGI robots, because I saw there was like a CGI Zaku in the trailer, and it's kind of like, I'm never really confident in Japan's CGI abilities. Even something like Black Lotus, you know, it's like based on an American property, you'd think they'd have a lot of budget from like Western investors at Warner Brothers, but it really did not look any better than a PS3 game. Mm-hmm. The facial animation on that was just terrible. But if it's just robots, I can kind of accept CGI more. Like, I didn't mind the CGI robots in Gundam The Origin. I know some people did not like that, but I thought they looked okay. It wasn't, like, distractingly
I
liked.
I mean, I had no problem with how Gundam The Origin looked like. I know it was CGI mecha. We did a whole episode about that, and I made fun of
it. Yeah, we defended that.
We did. Yeah, I still defend it now. I still like Origin. I don't know why people give it up. It's so stupid that people hate that. The story's so solid.
Yeah. I think people are kind of, they were like too attracted to the artwork of the manga. And I think they did a good job of trying to translate that to anime, but there's always going to be something that's lost in translation where you should read the manga too and get a sense of each individual panel to know how it's kind of storyboarded in the style of Kazuhiko, but like, you know, I think the anime did a good job. Like, even the sequences with the cat and stuff, the way it moves and stuff, I think it looked a lot like even the slapstick sequences in the manga with the kids and stuff. They translated it all pretty well, the animation, I think. And some people didn't like it, but, you know, I thought it worked well. Oh, one more thing about Gundam. I've been reading some of the manga. Zeta Gundam Define, it's very similar to Origin, but for Zeta Gundam. Mm-hmm. And it's by the same guy who did Char's Deleted Affair.
Yeah, so it basically,
it continues off the end of Char's Deleted Affair, where they show at the very end of that, Char becomes Quattro, mm-hmm, and joins up with Ayug and is, mm-hmm, about to, you know, go on his mission where he meets Camille and everything. And I think Zeta Gundam Define, it's really good. They've added in more characters who, of course, die. Mm-hmm. Tragic, yeah, deaths in Tamino fashion. And right. I think that they're actually good, and they fit in to the extent where I couldn't even tell, because it's been so long since I've seen Zeta, which ones were originally there or not. And I had to look up which ones were new. But yeah, they fit in really well, and they add like an extra element of tragedy to it. And somebody has just recently started translating it again, that's gone through like three different groups, but they're almost caught up, and they're currently on the part where Four has just died, or she's dying. I think Camille like still detected a pulse in the last chapter, but you know she's not going to live no matter how much they change it up from the anime. You can't remove that sort of tragedy from it, or it becomes totally different. But yeah, and I think it's a little more mature than the original show. They have more nudity and that kind of thing. You see Char in bed with Rekua, mm-hmm, and there's a lot of shower scenes, that kind of thing. As people probably can guess if they've seen Char's Deleted Affair, it's filled with that kind of stuff too. But and the political elements are more fleshed out with Jamatov and Paptimus and all the different factions on Earth, and Ayug and Karaba and all these different things. The meeting with Char and Amuro, I thought, was done really well. They built up to it for quite a while with Char meeting Sayla and all these different, you know, hints that they did. We get to see more of what Amuro is up to, where he's like in charge of like a flight school now on Earth, and he's got all these students that he has to fight against in order to steal the mech, in order to escape and defect to Aayug. It's actually a really good manga. I think it's got like twice as many chapters as the anime has episodes, and they've only made it to Kilimanjaro, and Rekua has not defected yet. I don't know if that's even going to happen because they've changed it up so much. Mm-hmm. But it would be kind of nice if she didn't, because they kind of ruined her character in the anime by having her go psycho and become a traitor. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's nice to imagine that some of these characters have happy endings, but I don't know if it would even be Zeta if it did not have that kind of stuff.
That's true.
Because what people love about Zeta is that it's a tragic anime. Like, that's what people remember about it, is that everybody dies. It's like the quintessential Kill 'Em All Tamino. Mm-hmm. Like, it's kind of like trying to make Victory Gundam or Ideon or something have like a happy ending. You kind of just can't do it.
Yeah.
I mean, they tried to do that with the compilation movies by having Camille not get mentally broken by Paphtimus. Mm-hmm. And people were not happy with that. They were like, you've just messed up the whole UC timeline. How does this affect Double Zeta? You know, like, even if they try to give it a happy ending, people aren't going to like it.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think it is more memorable if characters die and stuff. Mm-hmm. I actually read that, like, Elvis's first movie, he dies in it, and they had to really talk him into that. Wow. And the way they did it was they told him, well, people remember movies where people die at the end, because that produces more emotion in them, and they think back wistfully on the character that died, and so they think back on the movie too, and so it becomes like a classic in their mind. You know, like, what do people remember about Old Yeller? They remember that the dog dies at the end.
That's true.
What do people know about Bambi? Well, they know Bambi's mother dies, right? Like, that's like what people remember, is like death scenes. It's probably the most memorable part of a movie is when somebody dies. But apparently Elvis's mother cried watching the movie, and then Elvis is like, "I'm not doing that again."
Oh, so then mama, I ain't doing that again.
Oh, mama! I can't upset my mama. That's almost a Johnny Bravo, but still.
Guys, you made my mama cry. I can't do that no more. Man, we're almost at, like, we're at 2 hours 45 minutes. I mean, we've had a lot to catch up on, and stupid con bullcrap and Memphis bullcrap. Screw that town.
All right.
F you, Memphis, and F your Beale Street Entertainment District. I don't know. yeah, I'm combining the F you Texas song with Memphis.
Yeah, with Ghost, you would be talking about 6th Street.
6th Street is Beale Street.
Yeah, I remember he actually like turned on 6th Street because there were like Muslims there or something. And then he moved to San Hambonio.
he had to go to like San Hambonio, Japan con, the anime con there, so...
He'll be there in a brony costume.
Oh my gosh! Or somebody will.
He's firming up.
Wait, wasn't one of the listeners of the show like brought a wheelchair with a skeleton in it, and called it Ghost and brought it to it was Colossal Con or whatever.
I don't remember this, but probably.
Yeah, it was on YouTube, and he streamed it once. He's like, "You brought me to a damn depraved anime convention, you son of a bitch!" And he just got so mad.
I haven't listened to him much lately, but I did find a video. He was promoting it on his community page on YouTube, where he had predicted the general turning on Putin.
Yeah.
Like a couple months before it happened.
Wow.
Which the prognosticator strikes again, as he would say. But I actually listened to that part, and he was pretty spot on. But I mean, it was kind of something that a lot of people were thinking might happen, because he had. This guy kept doing these vlogs where he would just go on these tirades about how the Russian military wasn't giving him enough military aid, and if he didn't get what he wanted, he was going to take it. And, you know, mm-hmm. he was kind of openly, you know, turning on them even before he officially did, you know?
Yeah, yeah, really.
But Ghost kind of does that kind of stuff where he'll, like, he'll see something and then he'll, like, make a kind of obvious observation based on it, and then he'll claim that he's a genius. He's not exactly a humble guy.
No. I'm ready to call it a night. I don't know about you.
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. Well, second recording of 2023. This will come out at some point. Dude, we're not going to get daft on here, and I kind of already talked about MomoCon on my YouTube channel, so I can just, I can link at least that on here, and we can't get daft to commit to anything, so it's no big deal. Excuse me.
Oh, to talk about Anime Boston, well, we don't really need to do that.
Nah, it's fine. The only thing I had a couple videos in that were finalists, and it didn't go far, so. Oh, well. All right, I'm gonna go ahead and shut her down. Welcome back to the listener, or listeners, hopefully.
The listener, that's Daft's favorite term.
Yeah, I know. That's why Daft isn't here to say it, because he's a loser. So, anyway, so I'm gonna shut this down, and this will come out at some point, hopefully before fall happens. Who knows? It just depends on when I can get around to sitting in one sitting, listening to 2 hours and nearly 50 minutes of podcast footage and throwing a song in there or something. So, all right, we're out of here. We'll talk about something later, and I'm not going to promise anything because you never know.
He wants some beef with me.
What?
Bug Lil K, Bug Big K, pull on his block with the AK, bitch. Bug Lil K, Bug Big K, pull on his block with the AK. Bitch. Fuck Memphis, man. Memphis K, bitch.